Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Burdens of debt gives us a freedom unmatched. Peace of mind is something that's very vital to our health. Not only do we want to concentrate on growing our own food and contributing to nutrition, but we also want to free our mind from the burden of stress. Stress is a killer. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Look at the items we have there. Before making any selections, you can give me a call. If you have problems with your student loan, if you got a situation with the Internal Revenue Service, mortgage, or whatever it is, go to newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amaniel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remove. During a natural disaster or an economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amaniel Bay. For more details, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amaniel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay, everybody. Tahaka Archives Master Library is up and running again. For those of you who have gotten a hold of Tahaka's Archive Master Library, go ahead and either give me a call or forward me your donation ticket back to Tahaka53@hotmail.com, and we'll get that thing to you. Also, for those of you who have not accessed this powerful library, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. Click on the donation page up top, and you'll see a complete listing of the packages and stuff that we offer. And of course, Tahaka Archive Master Library is now officially listed, and we're back up and running. Okay? Peace.
Welcome, Morris. Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amaniel Bay. And this evening, we're going to deal with this debt situation from every conceivable angle. The professionals, contracts, equity, law, mortgage, loans, and justice. We want to bring in the top guns. And keep in mind that everybody that you're going to hear from this evening is inside the Master Library. It's in there. Also keep in mind that every package that is listed at newdebtelimination.com, Tahaka Archives Master Library comes along with that. Even if you're trying to own your own business, if you click on the link up top, how to own your own business and your own business for you, newdebtelimination.com has that information listed, and Tahaka Archives comes along with that also. Every package that's listed, this thing comes along with that. Next week, we'll be making another sit-down on this thing, and we'll be adding other files. It's going to take some time. You have a massive amount of information there, all top of the line, all top of the line. Just keep in mind that we continue to add information in there. You'll see the new links. Just go back over. You can go back over the stuff that you've already looked at. Scroll down to the bottom of the page, at the top of the page. You'll see something new. And now check it out. There may be documents available for you. There may be books available for you. PDF files, Word files that you can actually just fill out right there online. Also, your audio, your video plugs. Look out for all of that inside this library. This is a massive attempt to inform people about how to deal with law, their culture, their history, the ancient story, contract law, equity, commerce, you name it, is there. We're trying to do everything that we can to cover all of the bases. But tonight, we will be dealing with what makes your mortgage illegal. What is it that's making this thing illegal? What's going on? What should we use in court, law or equity? Which one? Just what is contract law? What is the meaning of private and public? What are the mechanics behind eliminating debt? What are courts and judges? What is that? Okay, now we label this as part one because we're going to do our best to get as much of this stuff out here, but I want you to keep in mind the underlying factors that you will, the main theme that run through this entire thing, and you're going to find out what it is. I'm not going to mention it, even though I've mentioned and said it 1,000 times myself and told you over and over and over in previous broadcasts. But this particular show is something that I want you to go back and re-listen to again. If you got questions or comments, raise your hand. I'll open up the line so that you can let me know what's going on. We got chat room open. And for those of you who do not know how to get in here, the call-in number, if you want to just call in and listen, or if you got a question, follow the prompts on your phone. The number to dial is 310-982-4184. That's 310-982-4184. You're listening to Morris Talk Live 100 at Blog Talk Radio. Also, I want to put some emphasis on the fact for those of you who would like to actually see the documents, those of you who are new, because we're constantly picking up new people all the time. And if you're listening to this broadcast for the first time, we were able to cancel the mortgage on my property in order to see the documents that was given to me by the county recorder's office, clearly showing that's a done deal. Go over to my blog spot. If you're on, if we're friends on Facebook, go over to any of my ads and you'll see my blog spot link there. And the reason why I'm telling you to go there is because you can blow it up. You go to blog spot, you click on the picture, and it gives you a live picture. And that way you can read every letter that's on there, every alphabet that's on that page. So that because we don't have anything to hide, you can see it for yourself. Also, the photographs of how we successfully was able to exercise our freedom of right to travel. The photograph is there. Also, you can see that the homemade tag made it on the computer is there. Made my own identification on the computer is there. You can see it standing right there out there in the public with that. For those of you who do not believe that these things cannot be done or haven't been done, I would just simply like to provide you with proof, and then we can move on to something else, okay? But tonight, we're going to hear from the pros. We're going to hear from people like Gene Keating. Also, who else we got here? Let's see here. Jerry Day. Also, let's see, Dean Clifford. Who else we got? We got some more folks on here. We got all your big guns that's going to lay this thing out for you and put it in perspective for you, which is the same thing that I've been telling you all the time. Now, we're going to start with the mortgage situation, okay? And keep in mind, the question was, what makes your mortgage illegal? What makes your student loan illegal? What is the underlying factors on this thing? What's the mechanics behind this thing? How could we have law in America when there is no money? If you can answer that for me, let me know. We'll be here for 3 hours waiting on you. If we can have law in America without money, let me know. Okay? I would like to recommend the book for you to read. And this is already in Target's archives already. But you can also get this right there online. It's a book written by a woman called Mary Croft. The title of the book is How I Clobbered Every Bureaucratic Cash Confiscatory Agency Known to Man. Okay? Written by Mary Croft, How I Clobbered Every Bureaucratic Confiscatory Cash Confiscatory Agency Known to Man. Okay, and you can go right there online. Just go right there on Google and type in Mary Crawford. Those of you who do not have Todd's archives, got the archives, you can just click on that link and it's right in there. You can read it right there online. Okay, now we got a lot of information. There's no way that I could bring this complete thing to you tonight. So we labeled this as part one, and we will be right back with part two before my guest. Hook up with my brother. He's going to be coming in, Dr. Aleem Bey. Before I hook up with him and do a thing with him, we're going to come back with part two so you can get the full understanding. And you, all you have to do, for those of you who are trying to relieve yourself of burden of debt, is just re-listen to this broadcast over and over. Listen to it several times. Listen to part two several times, because these guys are going to deliver for you the bottom line factors, just straight out bottom line factors. Okay, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. I mean, all we got to do is understand these things, and then we can go forward. We got the tools. The tools of production is right at newdebtelimination.com. We got that. Only thing we need to know is how to put it together, what we are putting together. That's all we need to know. Okay? All right. We're going to start with a gentleman, an Asian gentleman, guy's from Asia, and his name is George Tran, okay? And the segments are 14 minutes apiece, well, a couple of them are, but he's going to deal with the mortgage. I want you to pay close attention to this, and we'll run a couple of these, and we'll take a little break and come back, but if you got questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll recognize them. And as soon as the plug is open, we'll open up the line for you, and you can let us know what's on your mind, okay? But just hold on a minute. We'll get this guy here, and then you can check it out. His name
How are you, George?
Is George Trent.
I'm doing great, thanks.
Oh, brilliant. Well, it's really nice to talk to you. I've been following, you know, what you've been doing on your website and stuff, and I'm a huge fan of everything you're doing. So thanks for agreeing to talk to me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ben.
and there's several reasons I wanted to chat to you on Skype, really, and interview you, because there's a lot of people in England that have been following your process, and, you know, any time that anybody ever asks me about mortgages and that type of thing, I always direct them towards your website, Free and Clear in 90. So would it be okay with you if you just tell us a little bit about what you've been doing recently and that type of thing? And
absolutely, would love to.
Great.
So just for an overview of what's happened from the beginning, so in case some of the viewers are not familiar with my story,
yeah.
I was a successful entrepreneur, made a lot of money, and I started a dot-com company. And in 2007, it was called Social Sam, and it was a failed venture, but I kept sinking money into that venture. And at the point I was burning between $5,000 to $10,000 a month. And at a point where I just ran out of money, I had to decide whether to continue to feed my mortgages or to pay and feed for the dot-com. I chose the latter.
Hey, George,
to my estate. Yes.
Is there any chance you could get a little bit closer to the microphone?
Okay, let's try this.
Yeah, that sounds a bit better. Yeah, okay, okay.
So, where was I? So I decided not to pay my mortgages, and I went to feed the dot-com. Well, obviously, the dot-com failed, but at the same time, I was way, way, way behind on my mortgages, and I couldn't catch up. And so as I was going through these problems, I heard about this thing that produced a note and, you know, mortgage fraud and all that. And for the most part, I thought it was just a bunch of, for lack of a better word, deadbeats, you know, just people who couldn't pay their mortgage and blah, blah, blah. Really didn't give much credence to it. And then when I looked into it further, it became clear to me that it's not a bunch of deadbeats at all. It's really quite legit. Hang on, I'm having... There, okay. It was I find that it was quite legit, and I thought, hey, let's investigate this further. And I started listening to Angela Stark's talk shows, the private audio, and I started hearing about John Stewart and Jerry Kane and a whole bunch of other of these guys discussing about these situations, and it made sense to me. So then I just basically took what Jerry said and I implemented the process for kind of challenging the lender for their right to enforce the note. Well, they didn't respond, and in the beginning, I just didn't know what the hell I was doing. I was just simply following a process and documenting my process. So I challenged them. I asked them to produce proof of claim. They didn't. I gave them 30 days. They didn't. I gave them another 30 days. They didn't. So I then wrote a notice of lender's default, declaring their claim null and void. And as I'm reading my deed of trust, I'm finding that that's actually quite proper. You can't just litigate against your lender just because you actually have to give them out-of-court opportunity to cure. And accidentally, that worked, so that they can't go back and say, well, you know, you agreed in the terms of the deed of trust. You won't do that. So anyway, so after I declared their claim null and void, I did a writ conveyance. I did a substitution of trustee. And I appointed my own trustee, and then I instructed her to do a reconveyance on my properties. And then what else did I do? And then I then had the property conveyed to another entity. So it's a level of protection through a private administrative process. Well, what I discovered was the bank didn't really give a shit. They foreclosed anyway.
Right.
So the private remedy, I don't know what Jerry did, but as far as my experience and everybody that I've seen, spoken to, have not worked. And so I had no choice but to bring a civil action against my lender, because we live in a non-judicial state, and I don't know what the story is in England is. But as far as them foreclosing on your house, they don't have to prove anything. They can just go ahead and just foreclose, and Bob's your uncle, they get your house. And a lot of people have been criticizing, well, George, I mean, crap, you lent the money. You had the benefit of the house. You can't pay. The bank has the right to foreclose. Well, it's deeper than that. I mean, and you've heard about foreclosure fraud in robo-signers in Florida and all that. And that's really the tip of the iceberg. It goes a whole lot deeper. And if you can excuse me, I'm going to take a drink. So the thing is, not only did the bank see, I mean, here's the thing. If I lent you money from my own pocket and you didn't pay, and I have your house as security, that's one thing, because I actually suffered a financial loss as a result of lending you some money. I can prove that. I can go to the bank and say, hey, look, there's a check written to Ben. And so, you know, I can prove that. Whereas with the bank, they don't do that. They just create money out of thin air.
Yeah.
It's just magic fiat currency anyways. It's not. There's no gold in the vault. There's right. No nothing. They just created money out of your signature. So they actually had no skin in the game whatsoever. I mean, literally, it was just created out of thin air. So it's a money creation death game. I mean, it's a game of modern slavery, for lack of a better word, because they just create so much debt. And by charging interest on the money creation and then the debt interest on the debt, I mean, it just compounds and it just burdens us and it makes us ultimately slaves to the system.
Right.
But that aside, what ultimately happens is not only did they make money out of 15 years, in other words, they have no cost of doing business whatsoever, and they get to have your money to, you have to pay them back at 6% over the next 30 years, or 9% or 10% at times, right?
Right.
Crap, that's a good business.
Yeah.
Ben, if I, you know, yeah. would you go into a business like that
yeah,
with no
yeah.
money of your own game, right?
Yeah, I'd love to be a banker. It sounds like a great business.
Great business. I mean, cost zero. Whenever you have a situation where you have zero cost of doing business and you charge a compound of any face value for that amount for the next 30 years, that's a damn good business
deal.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right?
Just for the benefit of some of the people that might be new to the concept of, you know, the banks creating money and monetizing the note and things like that, some of the people watching this, they might have heard of it, but they might not really understand. Would you mind giving like a basic, just a, like a simple explanation of what happens with that?
Well, I think, Ben, you can probably do a better job as far as money creation goes, you know.
I don't know.
But what I understand it is, the movie The Matrix explained it really well. You know, we are in this fabrication. There's the real world, and there's the matrix that the corporation has created. And we are individually have two faces to our existence. We have the physical, flesh and blood human being that is the proper name. You know, when you were born, you were given a proper name, right?
Right.
Capital B for Ben and capital L for Larry.
Yeah.
Okay. But then they bastardize you as well. They made a duplicate copy of you in the matrix, and it's all capitalized. And that is a fabrication. It's called a fiction. It's not real. But in order for these entities to interact with you, they can, a fiction, a make-believe, a Harry Potter, cannot interact with the real flesh and blood George Tran or Ben Lowry.
Right.
It's impossible. But a Harry Potter can interact with another fictional character.
Right.
And that's what they created, is just this matrix of fictional characters, all cast.
Right.
And so when you, that's, it goes deeper than that, but when you, in the creation of money, when you were born, you were submitted into the system by your parents, unwittingly, unknowingly, into literally your human cattle.
Right.
And you're issued a birth certificate. And in that birth certificate, basically, it's your mom and dad's pledge into the system that they didn't know what they were bargaining for.
Right.
They were just duped into thinking, hey, that's the proper thing to do, is to register my son into the system. Well, when you got into the system, you were given, issued a social security number, and you probably get something similar in the UK. You get a number, and I guess I don't want to go too deep into that, because Winston Strachan can go into a lot more, but ultimately you're make-believe, and you have access to this treasury account. Right. And as I understand it, when you write a promissory note, all they do is they debit money from that treasury account into funding that transaction. So in fact, they took your own money that you created and gave it back to you and charged you interest for it.
Right.
So that's how the deception works at the end of the game. And for a lot of people, this is like, well, it's really deep, and it's almost really Harry Potter stuff.
Yeah.
It's magic. It's,
yeah.
it's weird stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, I encourage you to kind of do your investigation and discover, you know, what's out there. Because, I mean, I've had months and months of research into this thing, and that's what I've discovered. It's just, there's a lot, the rabbit hole goes quite deep.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
And so they created the money, so it's a fiat system. There's no, back in the day, you know, when the British pound is so powerful because it represented one single pound of gold, or actually a pound of silver, I think it's called.
Right.
It's a pound sterling, right?
Right.
Sterling is silver.
Yeah.
So it represented a whole single pound of silver. That's a lot of money. And when we moved away from asset-backed money into paper money, fiat money, it's make-believe money, there's nothing binding them to anything.
Right.
So the Reserve Bank of the Central Bank of England basically has the right to create money, but it's not even part of the government.
Right.
It's just some corporate entity that has the right to print money, and that the British people, when they print money, have to borrow that money that the British people should by right have the right to print. But they basically print money, lend it to the British people, and charge interest on that money to the British people.
Right.
And the same with the US, right? It's a scam. Mm. And it goes so deep that we just don't understand how much of a burden of taxation they keep adding to us. And it's not just your taxes. It's all these interests and all these stuff that they don't – I mean, you're literally buried in how much money that you pay to the system. It's more – I mean, what better way to slavery when you can deceive the people to think that they are free, have power, but at the same day, you get to collect taxes on their labor and efforts anyway. So it wins both ways. Mm. Anyway, so I don't want to go into the whole conspiracy theory and patriot movement.
Right. Oh, that's really good. That's a good explanation. And something I wanted to ask you, George, I saw on your website there was a video of a couple that had used your process to kind of sort out their own mortgage. And what was that about? Could you tell us about those people?
Sure. So that was Greg and Tracy. And since I wrote my book in April, and the very day I published it on the Creditors and Commons website, Greg and Tracy found me and found that I was living in Eugene, Oregon, and they're in Eugene, Oregon. So they called me up on the same day I published my book. Right. So we've been masterminding, getting together and kind of sharing our ideas. And so she used Jerry's process. Actually, she met Jerry the week before he was killed.
Right.
And so she was the last person, as she claimed, to have hugged Jerry before he died.
Oh,
and so she went through the whole Jerry King process, so she knew exactly what I was doing. And so we met up, and they did the administrative process but never took it to the civil process. And so she basically took my pleading and then customized it to her own needs and situation and sued her lender. Her lender was GMAC, and they didn't respond. And so she just filed a motion for default, and she basically won because they didn't respond. And frankly, they can't respond because they've securitized the note. And let's go into that if you don't mind.
Okay, now check out.
So there's two, most people who graduated from my school understand there's two instruments of money. There is, when you form a corporation, you can either, as a corporation, owe money, debt, okay? And the other face of it is you don't owe money, you owe equity, is stock. You know, let's say you and I form a corporation, we'll put in $100 each. It's not a lot of money, but you have 50% of the company, I have 50% of the company, and we're going to just put our effort into this company to grow the company. Well, that's equity. So you either have stock or you have debt. So actually, let's have a better situation. You and I have a 50-50 corporation, and then we have a third-party investor who puts up $1 million. Well, that third party owns stock in our company.
Right.
Okay. Do we have to pay that guy back? No. It's through a corporate resolution that we might issue profits from the corporation to pay back this shareholder, including ourselves.
Right.
Okay. So that's what stock is about. So it's different than debt because debt you have to pay back.
Right.
So the reason why I tell you that is because what happens is there's this act called Glass-Steagall Act in the 90s, which basically broke down the laws for separating commercial banking from Wall Street. And it basically broke it together, and it was in theory a good idea, but what it allows the bankers to do now is to take your debt and convert it into stock.
Right.
And the thing about that is once you convert a debt, which has a security, i.e. the deed of trust, the mortgage, the thing that allows them to foreclose on you, the security part. When you convert a debt into a stock, you forever lose, you transform the nature of that instrument.
Right.
And once it's been transformed, it forever loses its security. Mm. It's gone. Mm. So these bankers would peddle mortgage-backed security safe to Wall Street. And these institutions, your retirement funds and stuff, they bought into it. Hey, that's a great idea. It's mortgage-backed security. What they didn't disclose is upon conversion, that security has been lost.
Right.
And so when they find out, these investment houses found out that, no, all this mortgage-backed security is just a sham, they started suing all these banks. And that's what happened in 2009, that whole massive bailout, that whole blood on Wall Street. Right. That's what it's about, is the investors suing the banks, saying, hey, you sold us a bunch of crap.
Right.
We can't secure anything. We want our money back. And that's what the bailout is for. And that's why, because we issued close to $1 trillion and gave this literally free money to the banks, why aren't loans being issued anymore? Isn't it supposed to free up the banking system and give us more money so we can actually buy houses and have credit and stuff like that? Why isn't it happening? It's not happening is because it protected the bank from these investors suing them. It basically paid off all that debt or all that money transferred over. So now, get this, I'm a banker. I just got paid by converting your mortgage into Wall Street. I got paid a lot of money. I got speculation growth too, because it's a stock, right? Stock speculates.
Right.
So the hot market, I get the appreciation from that as well. Hmm. And then the investors sued me. And so I got money from the government, free money, right, that I can pay off. So I got I was paid off completely. Right, when I'm securitized, and I got backed up by the government as well.
Right.
Not only that, it's not my money to begin with, right? Remember,
yeah,
you created the money.
Right.
It was your signature that created money through your birth certificate. So, wait a minute, it's not my money to begin with, and once I securitize it, it's forever gone, and I got bailed out by Wall Street. It's a good day to be a banker.
Yeah.
And that's what my mission is, to educate people in this scam. So what I'm saying fundamentally is every single foreclosure that happens is happening unnecessarily.
Right.
Because we have lost the definition of who the lender is. There is no lender. The lender is gone. When you sign a deed of trust, you have this two instruments called the deed of trust and the promissory note, right?
Right?
And it points to one party, the lender, right? Now, if this note, the deed of trust is pointing to the lender, and the promissory note got securitized and got messed around, moved around, blah, blah, blah. So in the deed of trust, it still points to the original lender, right?
Right.
Who is the lender now? We really don't know.
Right.
And so the definition of lender is now vague, butcherized. And so the deed of trust gives the lender the right to foreclose, but right now we don't know who that lender is, because the bank that you went to close either sold your note to another bank who then securitizes it, or if you dealt with one of the bigger banks like Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, they took the note and securitized themselves. And what they did in their great deception is they took the note as a originally they are the lender, right? But when they securitize, they no longer can be called a lender. They call themselves a servicer. You don't know. You're still making the same payments to the same guy, thinking he is the lender. In fact, he isn't a lender. He's just a servicer. And when he foreclosed, as a servicer, how can you foreclose if you're not the lender?
Right.
You can't. But they do it all the time.
Right.
How can they do this? Because if you're ignorant. And that's what my mission is, to educate people, to show them that this fraud is happening. So the whole thing about robo-signers and the big fiasco that was, it goes much further just than robo-signers. It's about who the real party of interest is. And we don't know who the lender is. And this is a Supreme Court ruling called Carpenter versus Longin, which says that the deed of trust follows the note. Imagine, if you will, the dog and the tail. Whoever controls the dog controls the tail.
Right.
whoever controls the tail don't control the dog.
Right.
In other words, the trust is the tail.
Right.
Most lenders are foreclosing on the tail.
Right.
The deed of trust.
Right.
But they don't control the dog. So if you don't control the dog, how can you control, how can you foreclose?
Right.
And they do it all the time because they rely on your ignorance, they rely on the lawyer's ignorance, and they rely on the judge's ignorance, and rely on everybody's ignorance to pull this off.
Right.
And my mission is to educate people to expose this fraud.
Wow, that's incredible. That's a really cool explanation. So that's great, George. What have you been doing recently? I noticed you gave a seminar recently. There were some videos online. Where was that?
Yeah, I went to Seattle and I gave a seminar, and it was phenomenal. It was really we had a lot of people who, I mean, this is my second time,
right.
And we even had a lawyer in the room. He was there in the first seminar, and he came back to the second seminar, and it was great because having a lawyer in the room backing me up and everything I said was tremendously powerful and satisfying because, you know, frankly, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I just did a lot of research and I'm sharing this idea with other people. And the fact that he can back me up 100%, everything I've said, I mean, he was right there next to me on the stage and he said, you know, everything George says made sense.
Right.
The second time round, because the first time it's like, well, this is really heavy stuff. He didn't quite get it. He went back on the second time. And it made sense to him, so it felt really good.
Right. Wow. Cool. What's some of your sort of best moments in terms of your most memorable things that have happened with court or with results that you've got, or like what's some of the bits that you're most proud of or most memorable?
Well, I've never been to court. I've never had to go to court ever.
Right.
I would say 99% of everybody that you've ever spoken to, the whole idea of going to court is just, I'd rather pull teeth from my own mouth, you know, it's just like scary, right? Why would you even do that?
Right.
So let me tell you more about this story then.
Yeah.
I filed a civil action against my lenders in March, but I then amended and refiled in June. They didn't respond in 30 days, so I had a default. So I celebrated my default in July, and my sale was in August 20th or thereabouts. Well, on like the 12th of August, I was notified that all my defaults have been set aside because they reviewed the paperwork, and it was not properly serviced.
Right.
And kudos to the judge. I mean, I really didn't know what the hell I was doing. So if it's not properly serviced, if I were to sue you, Ben, and I sent the notice to Africa,
yeah,
it's not fair. It's not in the name of justice.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So I need to have, if I'm going to sue you, I need your signature. It's only fair to prove that you received the summons.
Right.
If you didn't, then, you know. So the judge set aside, my bad, it was improper, perfect. So then because they set aside and my sale was literally next week, in order for me to stop the sale, I had to file for bankruptcy to stop the sale.
Right.
I filed for a Chapter 13. And so that happened, that stopped the sale. So then they moved the action from state court into federal bankruptcy court. And then they tried to do a motion to dismiss my case, which basically says, look, we'd rather dismiss your motion than to actually go into court and battle out and actually show you any proof. You know, we don't want to prove anything. And so they wanted to dismiss the action. And I objected to the action. And so we had a hearing on, when is this? November the 17th? Yeah, just last week.
Right.
And we had a hearing a couple weeks ago anyway. We had a hearing, and that was my first appearance ever in court.
Right.
And so we had that hearing. And it was interesting in that the judge was very fair, very honorable, and he actually wouldn't say take my side, but he called the opposing counsel straight. She spent 15 minutes talking about what constituted a qualified written request and what I did was not right and blah, blah, blah. And the judge says, wait a minute. Counsel, as I understand this, Mr. Tran here is trying to challenge who the lender is, who's the real party of interest. Are you the real party of interest? Do you have the note? And the opposing counsel says, yes, we do. And I said, objection. hearsay because she doesn't know that for a fact. And so the judge says, she's the office of the court, and if she says something, I have to believe her, which is kind of new to me. But anyway, he kind of spent 5 minutes just lecturing me on an office of the court and that she can't lie and she blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they didn't want to fight it. And then she said, Your Honor, we actually have the note right here. Holy crap! Nice. Because the rules of court is very specific. You cannot surprise people. Evidence cannot be surprised.
Right.
The days of Perry Mason and drama, it's all fabrication. You can't do that. You can't just say, hey, I got a picture of you at the bank with a gun. You can't. No, it has to be submitted before so that you can prepare for evidentiary hearing. But given the circumstance, that's exactly what I wanted anyway. And so the judge allowed it, and I didn't object. Why would I object? That's what I wanted to begin with. And so she presented the note to the judge. The judge inspected it and said, give it to Mr. Trent. And so here's the thing that was really peculiar. She said Mr. Trent exchanged the promissory note for funding for the house. She didn't say Mr. Trent had a loan. Mr. Trent exchanged the promissory note.
Yeah.
In other words, it was at real intrinsic value. The other thing that the judge said that was really interesting is, Mr. Trent, I hope you understand, these notes are actually worth value. If you damage or destroy these notes or do anything to this note in any way, I will have you arrested. Think about that.
Right.
Okay? This is real money.
Yeah.
Now, when counsel went home, she asked for an armed escort for my notes.
Right.
These are notes in default. They're worthless, right, Ben?
Right.
Apparently not.
Right, right.
She asked for a armed escort for the note.
Right.
Can you imagine that?
So that note is currency, as good as cash.
It's currency, it's good. So, I mean, the effect did not was not lost on me.
So that just goes to show that the idea of us signing a note or a promissory note is money. That just goes to show.
True. And the judge knew it. The judge knew it too.
Okay, now, very interesting.
All right. So anyway, I looked at the note, and the note was clean. The note was, I have what I call my magic pen. It's a pen I signed all contracts with. It was a specific ink. And so when they presented that note to me, it was in that ink. And my signature is rather unique. So it was really pointless. I could have said, hey, this is, and it could be a forgery, because unless we actually get it verified and forensically audited. But from the evidence presented to me, I just felt that it was like, it's a pretty strong case that it was my original note. It just looked really real. Okay. What was interesting is all notes, as far as I've ever seen, has on the back stamped pay to the order of. And what that means is, if Ben, I wrote you a check and then you want to sign it to your friend, you say pay to the order of, you're basically assigning the note to somebody else. Now that means I owe you no money. I owe this guy money,
right.
Correct? You've assigned the note across. Well, that's the back it has paid to the order of. When it's been sold, assigned, when it's been securitized, it's paid to the order of. The back is clean. There is nothing. There was nothing on the note as good as the original. Only two holes punched on the top. There is nothing.
So it hadn't,
which was really
securitized.
Amazing. It has not been securitized.
Right.
So I lost my case, and I do not begrudge anybody. Because, hey, if they are the real party of interest, they didn't sell it. The fact that they created the money and I could go with that, it's a hard case to argue. The fact of the matter is, I can't ask it. You know, they presented irrefutable evidence to my satisfaction and to the judge's satisfaction. So my case was dismissed. But I want to tell you from my experience, I actually have two experiences in court. From the experience in bankruptcy court, I had really good rapport with the judge. I even joked with the judge. I actually spoke to him like a human being. So it's actually a very pleasant experience, if you can call it that.
Right.
It wasn't as frightening as, you know, you might think.
Right.
So, but that's in federal bankruptcy court. I also had another experience in court as a witness in state court. And the situations were not so favorable. The judges were less kind. And words coming out of the judge's mouth is, you need to get a lawyer. You need to get representation. I strongly advise you. Require you to get a lawyer, but I strongly advise you to get a lawyer. I mean, the words were coming out of the judge's mouth for these type of languages. But for me, I guess this is the difference between federal court and state court, maybe. Yeah. But my friend also had a similar experience in federal court, not state court. He has a case where he's closed with Stearns Lending, remember, Bank A. Bank of America is trying to foreclose. And so the judge literally got on and slapped the attorney silly because, hey, you know, your paperwork is not in order. Mr. Waters wanted to have a loan mod done. And so because of this, he wants a loan mod. I want you to give him a loan mod. How long is it going to take you? 8 months. That's ridiculous. But let me tell you this. If it's going to take 8 months, then Mr. Waters, you cannot foreclose on his house, and he does not pay a single red dime until the modification is negotiated.
Right.
So that's what the federal judge said to my friend Mike.
Right.
Whereas in state court, and I guess maybe it's a difference of tone between state court and federal court, but anyway, we've had good experiences in federal court, not so good experiences in state court. But as far as memorable, that was a very memorable experience, and pleasant, really. It wasn't like scary.
Right.
And same with Mike, you know, his experience in federal court was just pleasant. The judge didn't take sides, but he was very fair. He basically saw the argument and went with the The thing about being a pro se litigant is in the U.S. anyway, I'm pretty sure in the United Kingdom as well, is that the judge has to look at your pleading and get the essence of your pleading, not the form of your pleading.
Right.
If you did a mistake, everybody has to be afforded justice. Whether you're a pauper, whether you can't speak English, it doesn't matter. You have, you know, let's say it's some African guy who can't speak English, and some British guy came and punched him in the face and broke his arm. Does that mean that guy is not allowed justice? Just because he don't have money and couldn't speak English? He has all the rights. You know, you assaulted the guy, right? That's what justice and equity means, is that everybody has to be afforded justice, whether they can verbalize it or not, the essence. And so as a pro se litigant, you actually have that you don't have once you get a lawyer. So you have a lot of leeway, and you can call the judge on that.
Right, I see. So the judge has to sort of try and understand your intention. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So your intention has to be honourable, obviously. Right.
I see.
So there's like a tactical advantage about being pro se and representing yourself, as opposed to like handing over all your kind of rights over into the hands of a lawyer type of thing.
That's correct. Well, the thing about lawyers is that, number one, this whole argument is so foreign and exotic to them that most people don't see it, and they just discount it and poo-poo.
Right.
It's like, this stuff doesn't work. I don't want anything to do with it. Because they specialize in certain things. Excuse me. They specialize in bankruptcy law. They specialize in real estate law. They know this stuff. They specialize in ambulance chasing, right? They know this stuff. They don't want to research any. They know their argument. And this is exotic stuff. This is a new area of law that, and they're arrogant. You know, you're a layman. What right do you have to educate a lawyer?
Yeah.
We've been to school, you know?
Mm.
So they don't want to listen, for one. And even if they listen, they will charge you $2,000 to $5,000 just to research your case without even doing anything for you, all right? So let's say you afford them. Let's say you have a $10,000 budget. Once you go into court with them, you forever lose your ability to say anything. You are represented. It's not you anymore. You're not represented. You are represented. Because now the lawyer speaks on your behalf, and he can say anything the hell he wants.
Right.
You have nothing.
Right. So it's no good for people like us, is it? Because we need...
Well, if you find a good lawyer, and there are good lawyers out there that actually know and believe this stuff, I think it's worthwhile. But finding a good lawyer is a challenge, and finding a good lawyer that you can trust that will do the right thing by you is a challenge. And I mean, I'm not saying don't get a lawyer. No, definitely do get a lawyer if you can. But just be very cautious as interviewing and selecting the right lawyer who can actually properly represent you. It's hard enough fighting opposing counsel. Imagine fighting your lawyer as well.
Yeah, right. I see.
Wow. You don't want to have an uphill battle both ways.
So, if some of the people, I just want to advertise your website. So it's freeandclearin90days.com. Is that right?
That's correct. Freeandclearin90.
And you've got like a free ebook, a PDF that people can download in order to get an introductory type of explanation to all this.
That's correct. And so, I wrote a free ebook documenting my initial process. I have not updated my ebook since. Like I said, it's just only been a couple of weeks ago. I came back from Seattle, and just a lot of things have happened since. Right. But I'm going to be releasing another book, basically going into more detail as to what I've discovered in the judicial process as opposed to the administrative process, because I think that is ultimately where we can play.
Right.
And there are a lot of people that say you can get justice through the private administrative process and whatnot. I've just not had a lot of faith in that. You know, it's just I've not seen many successes. I mean, there are successes, you'd hear them, you know, we're a very connected community. We'll hear these successes left and right, but, you know, they're few and far in between. I've not really heard enough successes to say, yeah, that definitely works. Yeah. The only thing the bankers listen to is a judge. That's the only thing they listen to. And so we have to go and play in that field, and you have to learn the rules of court. I mean, like anything, you can't just be an electrician. You need to get some initial training to know, you know, the red one and the black one, you know. What does that mean? What happens? You need basic education. That's what my coaching program does, is it shows you where to get the resources you need to be educated on the process. I'm not going to practice law, but I'll tell you where to go, how to hire a lawyer, what to say, you know, where to get the resources and sample forms and packages. Like, for example, I have what I use for request for admissions. A request for admission is a tool for discovery, which when you serve somebody, in other words, to say, hey, Ben, where were you on the night of the murder, blah, blah, blah. Basically, an admission is, I accuse you that you were at the scene of the crime, you know the victim, and the victim owed you some money. I'm accusing you of these things, whether you admit or deny. Right. So I include a whole bunch of requests for admissions that one could submit. Obviously, to, you know, you have to customize your own, but you can then submit with your summons to, in your complaint.
So is that like is that like an offensive sort of attack? Is that like a counterattack?
It is for most of us. We live in what's called a non-judicial state, right, which means that the bank don't have to prove anything. Now, those living in judicial states have different problems, but at the very least, the bank has to come up with proof. In a non-judicial state, they can foreclose on your house and just take your house, and they do that every single day. The only way for people in non-judicial states to get any justice is to bring action, to sue the bank.
Right.
And so my paperwork, basically I have to use a bunch of templates of paperwork that I used that, you know, one can take, butcherize, modify, but at least you know the form,
yeah,
and customize it to your own arguments.
Right. Wow. Sounds awesome, George. So, okay. So if people haven't already been to your website, they should go there and first read the ebook and then perhaps become a member of your coaching program or something. And also there's a couple of other things I wanted to, are you okay? Like for 5-10 minutes, is that all right?
Sure.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah.
I've heard on, I've listened to some of your kind of conference calls where you, you know, you speak to your members and stuff, and you always encourage people to set up groups and local support groups in their state, you know, so they can help each other. And I was just wondering, how's that going? Is there a lot of groups, you know, that are using your information in around the country?
I think so. I think, well, with my group, we've kind of lost our synergy. We went our separate ways and stuff like that. So we're not meeting as often as I would like. But people on the program, we have a registry. Once you sign up to the coaching program, you basically, we encourage you to put your name there and connect with somebody else. Because frankly, when you're in this, you can't even talk to your brother about it. Right. You can't talk to your wife. You can't talk to your neighbor. It's so exotic and nobody understands this stuff. Only another person who's been through the program can understand and relate to the situation you're in. Right. And so if you receive a letter from opposing counsel or, you know, stuff like that, it literally feels like you've been kicked in the guts.
Yeah.
It's not fun. It is just nasty. It's emotionally just draining as hell. Yeah. And so we have a meetup registry for this purpose so that you can actually call up and have, you know, conversations with somebody who knows the process and go, you know, how about you do this? So have you contacted so-and-so? Hey, have you done this? You should have somebody there to support you and actually can give you real guidance, because I can't. I can only give limited guidance, because if I start getting too much into your individual business and his individual business, then I'm practicing law. And I mean, there's no real law against practicing law, but it's certainly going to make my life a lot more miserable. And I don't want to ask for, you know, basically it's one thing that to know that the lion doesn't have any teeth. Yeah. It's another thing to slap it around on the face.
Right, right. I see, yeah. And what happened with, I know you received a letter from some lawyer regarding your website. They were accusing you of practicing law. What's happened with that now?
Nothing. I've not heard from them back. I've emailed them, I've wrote them, and nothing. I've not heard anything back. So I don't know. Until we hear anything back, it was amazing to see so many people supporting me by writing letters and calling the other guy. Apparently he was inundated for the week.
Wow. With, yeah, right. Oh, cool. Oh, really good. That's really great, George. It's fascinating to speak to you, and thanks so much for, you know, sharing that information with us. And just before we finish up, what I'm just interested to know, what are you working on at the moment? What are you studying, or what are you looking to do, you know, in the near future? What's your goal?
Okay, Moses, we're back now. This is quite interesting, and what we find out is there are a lot of people that do things, and I found out this in my own experience. I'm quite fond of the administrative process because it has always worked for me, never failed. However, I have had students and stuff before the library went down, has been in there, and had told me some of the most phenomenal things that they had done that went far beyond what I had taught them, which they use that too. But we're finding out that dealing with this law process and this contract law process and dealing with stopping these people with this fraudulent mortgage situation as well as your student loan and all this other stuff, there's 1,001 ways to do these things. But the key is to have the knowledge of the fabric of what's going on, what kind of blanket is on America, what kind of system are we dealing with? Do we have something to do some research with? And if we do some research and we understand and we look up the definitions, words, and we can understand them, then we have something to work with. Last night I was just dealing with the word mortgage alone, and then I found the word lien, which I knew was already there. However, I began to investigate that, and then I began to pick words out of the definition of the words that I was looking at and began to look up those words. And it is amazing the defense mechanisms that have been put into place to keep and maintain the enslavement of the people. And just like the gentleman had said, they are able to get away with a lot of this stuff simply because of our ignorance. Well, my job here is make sure that you are informed. I want you to know what's going on, and I want to put all the defenses out there so that you can defend yourself, because there's no way for you to be creative in this life and get on with the use of your talents when you're constantly burdened on a daily basis with debt and the burden of debt and constantly working and struggling while the rich and super rich just continually get rich and live exorbitant, wealthy, debt-free lives while you and I struggle and live under a burden with stress and medical problems and all of these things as a result of constantly worrying about how we're going to make ends meet. How am I going to pay this bill here? In a lot of cases, we don't even know that what we're paying is illegal. So we want to bring all of the materials to the light in this part one of this broadcast, and then we're coming back with part two because there's more that we're going to have to understand in dealing with this stuff. Okay, we're going on to the next, and we're going to listen to a gentleman called Gene Keating. Now, I want you to pay very close attention because we're going to deal with what should we use in court, law or equity. We want to learn about this stuff here, and keep in mind, I'm encouraging you to listen to this broadcast over and over until you get this stuff down to a science, okay? All right, just hold tight.
Okay, my name is Gene Keating. You want to test? Is this thing working? Is it working? Okay. I'm going to be your narrator today. I've been doing this stuff for 35 years. I started teaching this stuff way back in before we start, I'm going to pray. I always pray before we start. If you knew what was coming down the pike, you'd be praying every day. But I'm not going to go. If you want a separate seminar on that, I'll tell you what's going to happen. This planet is in grave danger right now. Okay, I'm going to say a prayer. Father, we know that the word of Yahweh is alive and powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of the soul and the spirit and the joints and the marrow, and is the discerner between the thoughts and intents of the heart. All scripture is God-breathed, given for reproof, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be thoroughly furnished unto all good works, a workman that needeth not be ashamed, but rightly dividing the word of truth. We pray, Father, that as we study the word of truth, that you open our minds and give us wisdom and understanding to apply the things that we are taught today. We ask this in the sacred name of Yahshua HaMashiach Shaddai. Amen. Okay, I'm going to give you a little bit of background. I've been to law school. I went to the same law school my brother went to. My brother's a judge in California. I have four brothers. They're all lawyers. My twin brother is a lawyer in judge in California. He's on the Superior Court bench. He graduated from USC, 4 years at USC, 8 years at Hastings Law School. I majored in commercial law. He majored in corporate real estate. He's a multimillionaire. Our brother's a very good at work. He's a senior partner at one of the biggest corporate law firms in the United States in Chicago, Illinois. He's retired now, and he gets a pension. He teaches. He does arbitration now. He's making a lot of money. And what I'm going to go in today is we're going to talk about commercial law and how it applies to you and what they're doing with you as a person. And I've been teaching this stuff for 35 years. I started teaching this stuff back in 1970. Nobody would listen, so I quit teaching it. Now people are starting to listen. I've known this for 35 years, what's going on, that everything is commercial. And the reason everything is commercial, there's no money. And what I mean by money is asset. And this is where commercial law comes in. There's two forms of money in commercial law. There's asset money and debt money. The asset money is on the private side. The debt money is on the public side. You have two different venues. You have a private and a public. And if you stay on the private side, you'll never have any problems. When you get over into the public side, this is where you get into the fiction, what they call legal fiction. And when your mother, your parents signed the birth certificate, they created a fictitious entity called a straw man. In commercial law, it's called a homostras, which is a legal fiction or a straw man. And what they did is they took this and they registered it with the Department of Commerce. They registered it with the Bureau of Vital Statistics, and then they registered it with the Department of Commerce. Then they registered it with the DTC. I don't know if any of you have. Does anybody in here know what the DTC is? Okay, there's two. Let me explain something to you. There's two different companies. This is the parent company here. Like this, it's called Depository Trust Clearing Corporation, DTCC. This is controlled by the Jesuits out of Rome, Italy. Called the guy that owns the Federal Reserve System is called, his name is Hans van Klovenbach. He's called the Black Pope. They own the Vatican, the Roman Catholic Church, the Pentagon, and the United Nations, which is a military-industrial complex. They run our government. I'm not saying our government. I don't want anything to do with these people because they're all going to be extricated here very shortly, and I don't want anything to do with them. What I'm going to show you today is how they're controlling everybody. That's why I'm going into this stuff. And this is proprietary information. It's not being taught by anybody in the Patriot community because they don't know it. I've done the research. I had a federal judge read my treatise, and he says I was 100% correct. Dan Benham read my treatise. I don't know if you guys know. Anybody here know who Dan Benham is? Dan read my treatise, and he says I'm 100% correct. So I'm not looking for patronization, for people to patronize me. I know what's going on. I've done the research and I've documented everything I teach. This is what I'm teaching you is what's going on. And you're not going to effectuate change in this country unless you know what the hell's going on. You got all these patriots going around filing papers, filing UCC-1s, UCC-3s, and they don't even know what they're doing. And you got people selling, like the Aware Group are selling UCC-1s, and they're charging $3,000 or $4,000. You got Howard Griswold selling UCC-1s to people. I was the one that got Howard into all this commercial law. You shouldn't be filing anything until you understand what you're doing. People don't understand what they're doing. They don't even know what a UCC-1 is. You can't file a UCC-1 unless you have a contract. Where's the contract? A UCC-1 is a financing statement. The reason you file a financing statement is because you got a contract under Article 2. You have to have a contract. It's the contract that makes you the secured party, not the UCC-1. You don't even need a UCC-1. How do you think they're getting you jurisdiction over you in the courtroom? Through contract. People go in there and file a UCC-1, then they go into the courtroom and contract all their rights away. debtor creditor. Where's the? Let me ask you a question. How can you have a debtor and a creditor when there's no money? If there's no money, how can you have a creditor? This what I'm revealing to you here today is what's going on in the courtroom. The court system is tied into this company right here, Depository Trust Clearing Corporation, the DTCC. And they own these two companies right here. There's two of these companies right here. This is the Depository Trust Corporation. And there's the Depository Trust Company, two separate entities under this, the Depository Trust Clearing Corporation. This is the NSCC. This is the MSCC, and this is the GSCC. This means National Securities Clearing Corporation. This is the Mutual Securities Clearing Corporation. This is the Government Securities Clearing Corporation. These are all subdivisions of DTCC. Everybody got their... written down? I've got a treatise. You're not going to get all this stuff today, I'll tell you right now. I've been teaching this stuff. I've got all this stuff memorized. I've been studying this stuff for so long, I've got it recorded all up here. I have a 150-page treatise. I've got a CD with all this stuff on it, all the laws they're using, everything. It's got what it is a disclosure statement on the DTC. It's a 55-page document. I'll show you how to order that if you want to order it. You should sit down and study this stuff. You have to understand what is going on in the courtroom before you ever go in there. Cases are won and lost before you ever get into the courtroom. My brother doesn't know. Everybody assumes because judge, nobody knows this stuff. Even the judges don't know this stuff. You got any questions about this?
What is the MS?
MS is Mutual Securities Clearing Corporation. These are company different divisions of the DTC. DTCC. This is the parent company. These are all trust companies. And they're all banks. This company right here is a securities depository and settlement company. They own everything. If you've got this, everybody got this written down? This is not my opinion. I've called these people up and talked. We got a taped conversation between one of the employees that works down there. You got to listen to this conversation. He's spilling the whole beans. This company right here, DTC, it's nominee. Nominee means name. It's called Seed and Company. C-E. D-E, and it's spelled in all capital letters, like that. That's the nominee. This word, you ever heard when they ceded the state of Maryland to the District of Columbia, it became part of the District of Columbia? Which is where your your government is, which is set up by the whole White House, is sitting on tax plot map. And all the lots are divided up like this. I'll show you. Everybody got that? All these lots are like, they're numbered like this. They go down here like this.
And another good evening. It is September the 3rd, 2011. We've made it this long. We've got 6 days until the big 9-1-1 extravaganza. Wonder what our government's got in store for us as far as the false flag on this grandiose anniversary of 9-11. We know something's coming. We just don't know exactly what. So something will be in the mix, I'm sure, if not before.
I've already heard what's going to happen.
Oh, have you? I hope you're going to be man enough to share it with us.
Obama said he's going to resign.
Gene, if you're on the line there, hit *6 on your keypad, on your telephone.
I'm here.
Hi, Gene. Welcome to the show.
Where's
the one and only.
How you doing tonight?
Yeah, I'm elated. We got the state of Nevada to file. I sent the state of Nevada a copy of the bill in equity, and they filed suit against Bank of America. They're going to shut them down.
Yeah, I understand that was actually your paperwork that did that, right?
Yeah, they filed it August 30th, 2011.
Okay.
We filed the complaint about a month and a half ago. And all of them are following suit. AIG just filed against they're suing the investors. Bank of America for the investors. This is another Enron scandal. You got to understand, I knew what was going on 20 years ago.
Go ahead.
The Enron complaint that was filed in the Enron case.
Uh-huh.
William Davies and Helen Hodges are the two lead attorneys for the investors that sued Enron. Enron was disguising mortgage loans as investment contracts. The banks are disguising investment contracts as mortgage loans. You got to understand what's going on here. That's not my opinion. I'm actually proving it. I'm giving them the evidence that that's what's going on. It's unassailable.
Gene, are you familiar with Richard Fine?
I know who he is, yeah.
He's got a big lawsuit, judicial racketeering down in the L.A. area going after RICO. He's got quite a video out.
This is money laundering, racketeering,
yep.
But you've got to go after them in equity. You can't do it in law. People don't understand equity. I've been brainstorming. I've got five of the greatest authorities in the world. I got Austin Scott. I located his brand-new 2011 rendition of trust law. I bought it from Aspen. It cost me $2,800. It's the only set this is like finding a diamond. Austin is considered the greatest authority in the world on trust.
Gene, you're gonna have to bear with us a little bit because, as guest 25 here says, please explain equity to us dummies. What's the difference between equity
using
and
kindergarten vocabulary?
Okay, the difference between law and equity, very simple. All law is colorable. Fiction. Why? Because there's no money. They look at form and character. When you bring an action under form and characteristic, you waive equity. It extinguishes equity because the court can't look at substance when you do that. Remember, one of the maxims of equity, equity looks at substance, not form. It looks at intent, nature, and intent of the litigant. Number two, equity recognizes beneficiaries, which means that when you go in there at law, on the law side of the court, which is the public side, you cannot bring up trust law, because if they don't recognize a beneficiary, they don't recognize trust law. Number two, therefore you're dead before you ever get started. We're shutting them down. We've shut 20 of them down, every single one of them without fail.
Now you do that through the paperwork?
Yeah, through the paperwork. We do it. We're in court. When you do a bill in equity, a court is a place, everybody has a mistaken notion about what a court is. A court is a place where a contract is made.
Okay.
It's not all of these buildings that you call courts are privately owned trading companies. They have a DUNS number. They have a SIC code, PIC code, CAGE code. They're commercial trading companies. They're not courts. We're doing this outside what you call the courtroom. We're convening a court in equity by filing a bill in equity, and they're recognizing it. I got a call from the head legal counsel of the Federal Reserve, and she's treating our bill in equity as a complaint. And are we getting results? You can't believe the shit. You got to read some of the letters I'm getting. I'm getting letters from the OCC, Office of Comptroller of Currency, from the Federal Reserve Board is sending me letters. They're not sending me the letters. They're sending my clients the letters.
Okay. Now, you have clients
we
underneath?
Got there. When you hit somebody alongside the head with a baseball bat, you got their attention. Believe me.
How can is there any way people
when you go
can
get into, when you go into equity, if you study what equity is, this is what they did under the King's Bench in 1066. They had a room. The king had a room where he convened court. They called it the Regis Room, R-E-G-I-S. And then what he did is he appointed, because he got overwhelmed, because a court of equity is a court of consciousness. And substance, it takes priority over form. Equity looks at substance, not form. When you go into, and this has been going on for thousands of years, it's not just after 1933, common law doesn't give you a remedy. Equity does. Like if you're going to be an injured party, equity will give you a temporary restraining order before you're injured. If you go in at law, you have to be injured, and then you can get your TRO. But equity prevents the injury before it happens. That's the difference. And equity works on substance. Equity, all of these cases involve a constructive trust in equity, which means that as soon as the act was committed, by actual constructive fraud, a constructive trust was created by operation of law. That means that an equitable lien was established, and legal and beneficial equitable title were merged together when this happened, because equity does what should have been done in the first instance. So as soon as they did the act, the trust was created, the constructive trust. They all became constructive trustees, or what they call trustees de sanctorum, because of fraud. So what happens is titles are merged, a lien is created. You've already won your case if you go into equity. That's how powerful this is. And what they don't even teach us the lawyers in law school. And the Bar Association has managed to hide this from the general public.
Gene, do you have any case numbers or case where any of this can be looked up for verification, validation?
Hell yes, I do. I have a equity is everybody. Go listen to Christian Walters. He knows what he's talking about. He's absolutely correct. The only thing is that taxes are statutory equity, and it's who owes the taxes, and people don't understand tax law. Taxes are interest on principal.
Okay.
When the tax return or the interest is returned back to the principal, you have settlement and closure. And since you're dealing in gift and you're dealing in estate law, until there's an agreement between the beneficiaries and the trustees as to what taxes are owed, and that's what my complaint does. It creates an agreement between the trustees and the beneficiaries as to what taxes are owed. If you don't come in there as the executor or the beneficiary, executor and beneficiary of the estate, then you're not, you don't have standing to come into court. Because when you come in there as a beneficiary, you're expressing trust, which is what Kristen Walters teaches, and he's absolutely correct. If you bring up the fact that you're a beneficiary, like I go in there and tell them that I'm a beneficiary of the preamble and a constituent member of the posterity under the constitutional trust. The Constitution is an express trust. And since I'm the beneficiary of that trust and the people that created, and I'm also the grantor settlers created the trust, and I became the beneficiary and heir to that trust. So the judges of these courts of equity have an oath to uphold that constitutional trust. If they don't, they're in breach of fiduciary duty. So they have a duty, a fiduciary trustee duty, to uphold the rights and remedies of the beneficiary of that trust. And that's what I use in my bill in equity.
Gene, we got a question here for you. It says, who is the posterity?
Those were the people that were the original members, constituent members of the, if you will, the colonies. When they adopted and ratified the Constitution, they were supposed to expound on the they were just going to alter the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union. They weren't going to change them. But what they did is they extinguished them. Now you're under the Constitution, but the Constitution was a trust, the original Constitution. If you want to get into the racial aspect of it, it's the white races. Why do you think they call the White House the White House?
You know, I'm going to have you take off on that one. Ed, from the Clan of Chatham, him and I are in agreement. We go off on this about every call we have, and we're accused of being racist and everything else. But if you take the letter of the law of the Constitution, as
that's
I understand
around, it, that's how they get around the truth, is by calling you a racist. They bring up this, you're anti-Semitic. The word Semitic comes from Shem, which means Semitic. Those were all white people. So what they're doing is accusing you, when they say that you're a racist, they're saying that you're being Semitic. Because people don't know what the word Semitic means. Shem, who was Semitic, was white. The three sons of Noah were all white.
Okay.
So what they're saying is that you're anti-white.
Wow, this is going to be a little bit getting my head wrapped around, because I know, like I said,
well, go look up the etymology of the word Semitic. It comes from Shem, and Shem was white. Songs of Solomon's. It says, my beloved was white and ruddy complected. And he's referring to Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ was white, ruddy complected. What does that tell you?
One of our guests here said the original people were French Moroccan. He goes on to say French Moroccan / American Indians.
Yeah, that's correct. The Cherokees, the original confederacy was the Iroquois League, which is a seven-nation confederation. They had the Senecas, the Choctaws, the Mohicans, the Iroquois, the Cherokees, who were all Scot-Irish, formed the original seven-nation confederation called the Iroquois League. That expounded into, that was the predecessor for the 10-nation confederation under the Articles of Confederation. They were all Indian tribes. Most of the plantations in the South were owned by Cherokee chiefs, who were all Scot-Irish. And they came from the highlands of Scotland originally. And for 300 years, nobody would fight them, because when they went into battle, they fought to the death.
Okay.
We'll study the histories of the Cherokee Indians. Since I'm full-blooded Cherokee, I can vouch for that. I spent 6 years fighting in the ring, so I can vouch for that.
Okay, Morris, we're back. Boy, he was doing good when he was talking about law. We're going to take a little quick break, and we will be right back. Y'all hold on.
freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-A-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and, of course, B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request so you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace.
Okay, Moses, we're back. Now, we're going to go to our next individual, giving you the key components of what we're dealing with inside the United States and how to deal with this debt stuff. We cannot succeed unless we have a basic fundamental structure of what's going on. We have to have that information at our disposal. So we're going to go into another guy that has been quite successful, done a whole lot of damage. And one other thing that I want to express to you, we have heard from a whole lot of people on the front lines and previous broadcasts and stuff, and I know you have run into a lot of these people on YouTube and other places. But we have this thing in our mind that if a person is out there doing something and they're having success after the other, and then one day we find out, oh, they went to jail. So, well, we can't listen to nothing he said because he went to jail. Well, you got to get this out of your mind because you have to understand what we're dealing with is criminals. If you understand that part right there, it doesn't mean that the individual, even though he was telling you all this good stuff, he was using this stuff, you being successful, he's being successful, then all of a sudden somebody went to jail. That don't mean that everything he ever told you was wrong. No. Now when you're dealing with criminals. See, when you're dealing with criminals, if you can understand the criminal nature, that may be a good project for somebody. Just take a little bit out of time to just understand the mind of the criminal. Because we got this thing, a lot of us are like, well, I'm throwing the baby out with the bathwater. No. No, you throw the bad water out. Don't throw the baby out. And I just want to put that out there and get you to understand that. You know, it doesn't, you know, because jail ain't tailor-made. It fit everybody. You know, so and this is a very, very tough game that we're dealing with. So y'all just hold on. You know, don't throw everything away just because somebody that you listen to, you find out all of a sudden he went to jail. Oh, no, I ain't going to listen to nothing. He got to say no more. He went to jail. Come on. We ain't that dumb. Okay? Not that dumb.
Talk Show. Recorded live.
Well, hi, everybody. It's August 18th. Tonight, our special guest speaker is Dean Clifford from Manitoba. You can find his YouTube channel is Manitoba, what is it, Free Manitoba, and your website is that freemanitoba.com?
Yeah, it's actually the website for one of the guys that comes to one of the classes here in Winnipeg.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Hi, Dean. I'm so glad you made it on after 37 minutes.
It's the black helicopter floating over my office. I swear to God, they're stopping my computer from working. So.
Oh, okay. You too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I swear I think they put the kibosh on my cable speed because everything slows down when I do these things. And
well, geez, no, I got a nice computer and everything here, and I uploaded that pro version, and I was on the pro version, obviously, in the chat window, but then it's still telling me I wasn't connected, and every time I pushed the connect button, it just took me to get a new pin, which brought me back to the same window where I was not connected again.
That is so weird.
So who the hell knows what was going on? So I don't know.
Yeah, maybe the next time you try it, it'll be cool.
Ah, well, it's all right.
I don't know. Anyway, I've been speaking about you all week long. I think everybody's seen your video series and is really turned on to what you got to say. You seem to put everything in such a nice, neat package. Why don't you, for those that don't know who you are, why don't you give them a little rundown of who you are and where you are and how you arrived at your great assessment
boy.
Of what's going on here.
Yeah, I don't know how great it is. I mean, everybody seems to be definitely kind of getting in tune with it because it is just that. It was simplified. I got so frustrated with everything that was going on online and all these theories and all the UCC stuff and truth talk and all these other truth language and everything else going on the Internet that not one theory seemed to actually have any solutions. And I've been fighting this for 15 years now. I think I still have my last income tax filing I did back in 1996. So my battle started the same probably as everybody else, which is usually with a problem with Canada Revenue Agency. And then you fight with them for a couple of years not knowing what's going on until you the Internet, thank God. I think one day I finally came across Eldon Warman's site for DTax Canada. And that was my first introduction to the fact that the name on the birth certificate wasn't me. And I think my whole world almost collapsed that day. So since then, it's been a long path to looking up, you know, looking what other people are doing on the Internet and following theories and deciding that things just don't hold water. And then I think about 2 years ago, we were, because everybody ends up operating off other people's work, right? We're operating off of other people's conclusions, and we don't know that the conclusions that they came to were correct. And so we were operating on a lot of improper presumptions in some of the court stuff we were doing here in Winnipeg. So we just decided we had to go right back to the drawing board because we couldn't trust any of the information we were working off. And that's what made us break everything. And so we decided, well, okay, to start from square one, let's break this down all right back to the very beginning. And we did. And then when we finally looked at the whole picture we'd painted by breaking everything down, we just went, holy shit. Well, now we know what's going on. Well, now it's going to be easy to proceed. So I think that's really my history. Other than that, I'm a contractor here in Winnipeg. I was building houses and doing renovations for a number of years, buying and selling some houses, and this seems to have taken over my life more recently, though. So I think this is the path I'm on now.
Yeah, we can all relate to that, I'm sure. So how did you arrive at your process or your understanding?
You know, it's weird. It's actually when I started teaching, when I had to start figuring out how to teach it to other people. That's what, well, how am I going to understand, how am I going to teach people what's in my head? So I'm like, okay, well, I got to draw it out for them. I'm like, okay, well, how do I draw it out? And I'm like, well, people have to understand that the name is an express trust, okay, and they have to understand that there's roles that are implied with an express trust. And then I had to start drawing it out because people like to see pictures. And the weird thing is, as soon as I started teaching it to people and drawing it in pictures, it even became more clear in my head. So every time I taught, it actually just became more and more clear in my own head as well, and just every new theory just kind of sprang from that, because once you understand what's going on, it's not hard to start to address the issue and figure out what's going on here, and that is contract law. Everything's contract law. I mean, everybody wants to say, you know, it's all to do with trusts, and it's all to do with trusts, and I mean, that's correct, but really, where do you even get the trust from? That's all a contract. So everything is a contract.
So when you get a letter, or let's see here, I have a list of things here I wanted to ask you, so let me get right to that.
Yep.
So you, we're in the United States. Most of us here are in the United States. What would you do in the United States? I mean, is it the same situation? Do you write a letter? What kind of a letter? These are notes that Alim, do you know Alim? He's the one that put
yep.
us in contact. He sent me some notes, so let me just start with those. How do you deal with these people, these IRS agents and, you know, government officials or
well,
imposters?
I know without even looking at American law that it's all based on the same premise, and that is literally just going by the maxim that no man has authority over another man, right? Nobody has authority over you. Everything has to be contract law. So in order for you to owe the IRS money, if they're claiming to collect revenue on behalf of the U.S. government, there has to be a contract in place for that. And then people would always tell me, well, the birth certificate is the contract. And I said, no, it can't be because there's no terms, conditions, there's nothing in there. All that you did was filled out a particulars of live birth when you started that. I said, so that has no foundation in law. There's no argument there. They can't provide joinder. Something else has to be going on here. And then it occurred to me, well, okay, for government to even talk to a man, well, they can't talk to a man. They had to get us to create our own commercial entity, if you want to call it that, a vessel. Agent in commerce is a beautiful one that I've heard people call it. I think that's great. It is your agent in commerce. It's the most descriptive and perfect term there is for it. And then people would also tell me, well, no, the government created that. That's not yours, and that's just a load of crap. That's not true. If the government created it, then they could create it without you, but they can't. It's something you created with your own signature and or your parents, which is yours. That is your signature because you're the heir to that estate. So the government got you to create an agent in commerce. Everybody thinks that automatically grants the government jurisdiction over you, and it does not. I don't care what anybody says. I know that's true because I've walked out of court very, very successfully against criminal charges, and I haven't heard from Revenue Canada in 15 years based on a very similar argument that I made 13 years ago that I didn't know what I said to the guy when I went to a meeting. But if you look up the word register even in Black's Law Dictionary, all register means is a public fact, just a recording of a public fact. That doesn't mean you're actually registered with the government as in a government agency. It just means that there's a public recording now of the fact that this agent of commerce exists out there that the government can interact with. Beyond that, everything has to be a contract. And when we started ripping apart Canadian laws, and everybody has to understand all the work that we've done, a lot of it especially, a lot of this is work on the shoulders of giants. There's a lot of people out there that years and years ago have done a lot of the groundwork when people like me were still believing that we are taxpayers. And we try to work off that. So there's other people out there that have done the research and they've gone through and they've provided the information going through the Criminal Code of Canada and all the Canada Evidence Act. I think episode 6 of one of my videos there, the sit-down talk where I'm just talking with people, I explain that if you go through the acts and statutes, you don't need to, but if you want proof of everything we're claiming to, it's all here because the Canadian government itself says in their own statutes that they only have jurisdiction over their own business. That's it. Which is obvious. That's a maxim of law. That's a maxim of equity. You can only have jurisdiction over anything that's your own business. So what the government's done is they got you to believe that everything that your agent in commerce does is a function of government. And that's a presumption. It's just not the case. And that's where I came up with the argument, well, okay, if that's their presumption, then I guess they have no problem providing a contract where I agreed to work for a certain wage or a payroll record where I performed a function of government and they compensated me because that's one of the three fundamental principles of contracting, right? You have to have consent, you have to have full disclosure, and you have to have valuable consideration, which means I was paid for my services. And the only way I could be paid for my services by the government is through the public payroll, public money. I have to be paid with public money. The government can't pay me with anything else.
What about benefits and privileges?
I don't believe in any of that stuff. Not everything the government gives you is a benefit or a privilege, right? And here's the reason for that. Number one, everything the government has, they got from us. Government has nothing of its own. Everything they have is ours already. So them giving me back something that's already mine is not a benefit or a privilege. It's already mine. They just administrate everything on an administrative level and take a percentage for fees for administrating everything they do. So government can't take $100 from you and then take $25 of it for administrative fees, give you back $75 and say that's a privilege. It's not a privilege. It was yours in the first place. Now you only have three quarters of what you had in the first place. So it's not a privilege at all. If anything, you've extended them a privilege. We have to everything. I found we had the most success when we looked at every situation going on out there and we flipped it around 180 degrees and said, well, this makes more sense. Is government extending us a privilege or are we extending them a privilege? So it turns out now that everything, and in my theory on this, and I have 100% faith in how correct it is everything that the government does is a privilege we extend them to do business on our land, to conduct commerce, to interact with us. That's a privilege that we extend them, not the other way around. That's the way people have to start thinking about it. They have to rewire their brains to understand that it's actually us. We are the ones extending the privilege, right? That's what creditors do. I'll let you ask a question from there, I guess. Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had my mute button on. I was talking to myself.
Oh, that's okay.
So what do? Then you write a letter. What kind of letter? A notice?
Yeah, well,
affidavit?
Okay. Well, yeah. If it's the IRS bothering you, that was the background on the if you want to call it an argument that I'm making now. But if the IRS is contacting you saying that you're required to remit taxes for the legal person, right? Well, number one, you can't just be obligated to remit taxes for a legal person. It's got to be a contractor. There's got to be a reason why they want you to remit taxes. Probably because they're claiming you perform some function of government, and they have the jurisdiction to tax anything that does business with the government, right? That's just taxation on something that's under their jurisdiction, and that would be anything performing a function of government, anything contracting with the government and being paid out of public funds. So that would be a first contact with the IRS. Would you would contact them and say, well, hang on here. I'm sorry, but are you claiming that I've performed some function of government that creates an obligation to file taxes with you? There's nothing they can say to that. And if they say, well, no, say, well, then what do you want? Why are you contacting me? What makes you think I have to file anything with you people? You can't force me to contract with you.
So you do that all on paper. Is there, a particular size of paper that you use?
I used to think it was important. I remember one time the government got back to me with a response to something, and they said, thank you for your correspondence. And I said, oh, correspondence. I said, no, that was a legal document. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, fine, maybe I should resend it on legal-sized paper. So I started sending a whole whack of stuff off printed on legal-sized paper. I don't think it makes any difference. I think if you're in banking and you're printing actual legal documents that you know, between two parties, maybe that's really effective. It's not necessary for just correspondence back and forth between the courts. In fact, if you go down to the courts when you go to file a lawsuit in the United States, I'm not sure if that's district court or what that is. Up here, it's Queen's Bench or Superior Court in Ontario. You can't file any papers on legal size. It's all got to be on regular size. Only your exhibits can be something on legal size. So I don't think that has any bearing, no. I created my own letterhead. I think I've sent copies of it off to people where people have to start understanding the administrative role that you have now over your legal person. And that's what that triangle that I was drawing there before with people was a very, very dumbed down, simplified version, just trying to get people to understand the concept. It wasn't meant to be like a rule of law. Like, no, this is it right here if you're not doing this. Because I don't believe in that, and I've said that right on there, that substance vitiates form, right? Substance is the most important thing. So what you want to do is you want to draft your own letterhead now. So I've drafted my own letterhead with my legal person name at the top, and then underneath the name of the legal person, you know, just like a corporation letterhead. Underneath that, I write, office of the director or office of the administrator. I write whatever my role or my title is, because my name is irrelevant.
Chief Executive Officer.
Yeah, executive officer. That's where that letter comes from, the meaning behind it. It's just establishing your title and your role. I don't believe that there's no standing in law. There's no law anywhere I've ever seen that says that if you don't have a certain dotted line in a certain place on a document that it renders it void. The substance of the document is what's important, and the substance makes the form. So form is irrelevant as long as you're – because we have to remember, laws were created originally so that even simple-minded people could understand what their rights were, and all you have to do is express something and express it to the best of your ability on a piece of paper and get your point across. And it's because it's the meaning, it's the intent. The intent is everything. Law, if law has no intent, it's not a law. And the contract makes the law. So therefore, whatever your correspondence is, makes the law between your parties. So as long as you express your intent and your purpose, then that is the form. So, but I firmly believe, though, that as an administrator, you may want to kind of, you know, like have a little bit of professionalism to your forms. And especially when I'm contacting the government, another nice little thing I like to put in there is I like to put a big title underneath my heading where I've got, Dean Christopher David Clifford in all capital letters to let them know this is coming from that legal person. That's who's contacting them. And that the actual individual contacting them is the administrator. So my title is right underneath that. And then I've got the contact address, and I put care of, just, you know, because I really don't know what they've never gotten back to me on what the Canada Post code is, whether it's a military designation, I don't care what it is. I put it in there, I just say you can contact me, care of this. And then directly under that, I say this document is a matter of public record. I let the government know, or anybody that I'm dealing with to do with the government, that every correspondence between myself and them is a matter of public record. It's now registered at that point, because that's what all registration is a public recording. So now I have a spot underneath that where I put public record number, and that's where I put the sticky for the registered mail, if I want to send it registered mail. So it's definitely a matter of public record now. I've heard all sorts of arguments. You know what? Actually, I'm going to leave it there, see, because there might be questions before I get off topic.
Okay, and I wanted to ask you, how exactly do you sign your name then?
You know what? I've changed that over the years, and I change it all the time. And I think the most recent one that I have now is I used to go off the theory that as above is below, and I used to put the same thing right below my signature that I had up top for the title. But now all I do is I put Dean C. Clifford spelled normally, and then I put duly authorized administrator right underneath that, and that's all I put there. And that's all.
So
you
don't
put
all there. You don't put all rights reserved or.
Because you got to remember, government can only interact with the legal person. They cannot distinguish between the man and the legal person. That doesn't mean you're one and the same, though. It means you're a part of the legal person. So you can assume any role, any capacity underneath that legal person, but all they can deal with is that agent in commerce. So I can't remember where I was going with that.
Well, I was asking you, how would you sign your document?
Yeah, so I just sign as the duly authorized administrator, right? I'm my role is administration. I'm duly authorized to settle matters both publicly and privately. I'm the man. When you want to talk to this legal person, I'm the man. You don't talk to anybody else. And that's what that signature denotes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I have a whole series of, we have like 10 people in line with their hand up wanting to ask
you
a question.
Oh, I can actually say, it's actually almost pointless to put all rights reserved. Simply because you can, but the only rights you can reserve with the government are the rights of the legal person. Because they're never coming after the man anyways. It's not a human rights issue. It's a contract.
Yeah, but it's the man they take when they want to put you in jail.
Of course, because you're liable for whatever contracts you enter into. Right? You're the security. The same way that, say, the Attorney General where I live is a man by the name of Andrew Swan, right? He acts in the capacity of the Attorney General. But if he acts in that role, if he breaks the law that the Attorney General is supposed to follow, that fiction, he's the one that's liable because he was the one that was playing the role, playing the function. If you're the chess piece that moves improperly, you're the one that'll be penalized.
You say on one of your videos that you know who the players are.
Know who the players are. There you go. That's a maxim
playing.
Of law. You ought to know with whom you deal. So my first correspondence with people is I want them to clarify precisely who they are. And I put that right in there. You ought to know with whom you deal. I'm not talking to you unless you tell me precisely who you are. And what your standing is with me. What do I care? Like, what's your standing? What business arrangement do we have? Who are you?
Right, I've already used some of your stuff. I've put it into practice. We'll see how it turns out. do you want to go ahead and start taking questions now?
Or? Yeah, absolutely.
All righty. We have Central Arkansas. Go ahead. Did you have a question for Dean Clifford? Central Arkansas, unmute yourself. I've unmuted you on this end. Do you have a question? Central Arkansas, did you step away from the phone? Okay, we're going to move on. I'll leave you unmuted. Just pipe in after we ask the next question. Dance Forever, let me unmute you. Okay, did you have a question for Dean Clifford?
Well, I'm
Go
not
ahead,
ready
Dan.
Yet.
Oh, you're not ready.
Not ready. I want to hear more.
Okay.
I want to hear more. I have questions, but I'm not ready to ask questions yet.
Yeah, it might get answered by the end of it here. Who knows?
Yes.
Okay. All righty. I tell you what, you and Central Arkansas, when you get it together, and just go ahead and hit star 8 again, and I'll see you, and I'll let you go ahead and ask the question when you're ready. Okay, moving right along, we have guest 16. Go ahead. Did you have a question for Dean Clifford? Guest 16. I know there's a little bit of a delay sometimes.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was on my phone and the computer at the same time. There was about a 3-second delay.
Yeah. Guest 16, did you have a question? Yay or nay? Hey, you don't know how to unmute yourself from your phone. I mean, if you have a mute button on your phone, be sure to unmute it. I do that all the time myself. Sit here and talk to myself. Then someone will come on and go, hey, is anybody there?
A bunch of other crap.
Yep.
And also to answer interrogatories. So my question to you, Dean, how can I use this information in order to get out of this at court?
Okay, so they've already got a judgment against you?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so what you have to go do then is you have to go back and you have to start attacking that right from the beginning again. And that's when you go back, and this would be the county, I guess, probably for property taxes?
Yep. Uh-huh.
Okay, and now would be the time where you start contacting the county and go right back to square one regarding their judgment, because you got to remember, it's never too late to go back and to void a fraud. It's never too late to go back and void a fraud. So you want to attack the very start of this proceeding to get rid of everything that went on, and that's to contact the county and ask them what their standing is with your property. Say, you can just say, you know, it's just come to my attention, and is now my understanding that I own my property fee simple as defined in Black's Law Dictionary, which means absolute. I'm the absolute owner of my property. Say, my property is not used for any function of government. Because what happens is government actually claims to be a joint tenant in common with your property. And I don't like to get into, I'm just going to look up fee simple real quick while we're talking. A lot of people try to get into this argument with me where, no, you see, because it all goes back to the Vatican, and the Vatican holds title to everything, and these papal bulls, this and that and everything else. They're not relevant arguments because that's completely unprovable. I really don't think that's what's going on. I think it's all contract law where the state, the county, wherever you live, they are claiming to be joint tenant in common on your property. The problem is they didn't help you buy it, did they?
No. And let me just clarify this. I'm sorry, Dean. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I just wanted to clarify. It's actually out here in the States, in some of our subdivisions, they have homeowners association.
Yep.
It's basically, in order to buy a house in that quote-unquote subdivision, you are forced to be part of this
homeowners association.
Right.
Okay, and then you have fees that you have to pay to be part of that?
And what does this
homeowners association do for you? What services does it provide in exchange for this money?
The services I guess they provide is if it snows, they do the common area. They don't do anything on my property. But, you know, if it snows, they plow the common area or they'll do trash pickup. So they do provide some services.
Okay, but those are all services that the state's supposed to provide from state revenue. So I don't understand where this homeowners association would come in. It sounds to me like it's somebody that's trying to subvert something that the state's supposed to be doing or the county, and then charging you a fee to do something that the state already collects public revenue for.
That's absolutely
so
right.
So I would attack that because road clearing and side, like anything to do with that stuff, that's all paid for with gasoline taxes, right? That's an apportioned tax. They can't just, you know, I don't think that has any standing. You could easily attack that and ask them, well, where, you know, what services do you provide for this money? Because everything has to be an apportioned tax, and just start asking questions and the whole legitimacy of it. Just because I signed up for this homeowners association, how does that automatically bind me to these fees and these payments for services that the state are supposed to be providing? Otherwise, I want all my money back from the state. Why am I paying taxes to them every time I buy something, if you people are just going to charge me for what the state's already charging me for? So it sounds like some fraud's going on there, and if you were to start to bring that up in court and demand some answers, you might see some action on that.
Okay, so how do I present myself in court?
I'm not sure.
Dress like a nun.
Andy,
nice.
You are crazy.
Hey, you know what? You want to be respected when you walk in there. You want to
absolutely
look like a schlub, you know.
Yeah, I mean, usually when if you mean like how do you say who you are when you're walking into court?
Right.
I guess.
Like, do I say that I am the administrator? Do I say I'm from the office of the executrix?
You are absolutely the administrator, and here's the thing too. So if there's taxes that are owing, this is something that can be discharged. So that is all correct. You can discharge all these taxes just by your signature. I talk about this on a lot of other videos about the AFV thing is only correct not because of anything to do with the accepted for value. It's just your signature. your signature alone is value because you're the creditor of the United States, right? If the United States can use your signature to create money, then you can use your signature to create money, and that's all discharging debt is. It's not coming out of some magic fund somewhere or anything. You're just discharging obligations, right? So you're actually going to be bringing down the debt of the nation when you do this. So when you walk into court, and especially with this homeowners association, when you contact them, or if you're going to go to court, when I stand up in court and I say, I'm here regarding this matter, because you'll notice they always want you to speak to a matter. They don't want you to show up and say, yeah, hi, I'm Dean. You say, well, I'm here to speak to that matter. And when they say, well, who are you? You say, well, I'm the duly authorized administrator for that legal person. They know damn well it's a legal person. And you say, I'm the duly authorized administrator. And I'm authorized to settle matters both publicly and privately. So I want you to present me with your original charges right now so I can settle them. And if they refuse, then you say, well, obviously they're not my charges if you're refusing them to give them to me because I'm the only one authorized to settle them. You're supposed to be holding them in trust for when the administrator shows up for me to settle by my signature. If they refuse to give it to you, you say, okay, well, obviously you don't have any charges for me, so I'm leaving.
And then walk my ass right out of there.
Walk your ass right out of there.
Okay. So when I am asking them to give me the, I'll say the instrument, so I can discharge it, so I can sign it with my signature, what am I putting on this?
What I would do, and this is actually a lot of this information is stuff that we haven't shared with anybody out here, but you can just write accepted on it, right?
Okay.
A lot of things accepted and then sign it, and you want to sign above whatever other signature is on there because if they've got a charge for you, that means it's already been signed by somebody from the government or some other individual, right? So that's why you want the original document that the judge has that he's holding for you for the administrator to show up to settle the matter. If you tell them that you're the duly authorized administrator and I'm here to settle that, they have to give that to you. Because what happens is when people are just accepting things for value and accepting remittances, and they're not accepting them both publicly and privately. They're only accepting in the private. And then the government basically is assuming the role of the public administrator for your estate, for your trust, and they're saying, nope. But if you sidestep the government altogether and say, no, I'm the only duly authorized administrator. I can accept both privately and publicly. I'm here to settle that matter. Give me your original issue orders or give me your charges. Give me whatever commercial paper you have, and I will settle it right now. And they're going to know exactly what that means. And if you get really good at it and you really want to start arguing and they say, well, no, you can't have that charge, and you want to say, well, then it's not my charge, and you get into an argument, then you say, well, say if it's not my charge, I'm leaving. If it is my charge, give it to me. If you're not going to give it to me, then you're concealing pertinent documents. You're denying me due process and remedy. It is an abuse of process, I guess, really, as well. But you can start throwing all sorts of terms around. They're not going to like you. They're probably going to have some sheriffs called in. And people got to remember that, by the way. A lot of the times when I send people into court and tell them to do this stuff, I'll warn them. I'll say, when you say a few of these things, they're probably going to have the sheriffs come in.
Right.
Right. So you got to be prepared for that. And you got to stand your ground.
And I also have to say I do not consent.
Don't touch me.
Don't touch me.
Don't touch me. Stand down. Public servant, stand down. Don't touch me.
Thank you so much for your help, Dean. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm not going to guarantee they're not going to touch you, by the way. That's my disclaimer on that. But we're doing things right when we do this. And what we're doing is if they have to go to the extent of now continuing to physically harm you and arrest you to get you to comply, we're just exposing the fraud that they're carrying out.
And that's under duress.
And it is under duress, yes. And you know to say some of those things, too, so.
Right. So it's documents that they're trying to subpoena from me, it's probably best if I just don't even bring them because should I file anything in the case?
Yeah, what are they trying to subpoena you to bring?
Oh, just bank statements, any bank statements.
I don't have any of those. Are you forcing me to testify against myself?
Yes, a credit report. It's ridiculous. I've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah, say no, thank you. Nothing can compel me to testify against myself. Nothing. Nothing on this planet can compel me to testify against myself. That's a violation of your rights.
Okay. So do I need to file anything in the case, like any kind of affidavit or anything?
Yeah, I would send them in just a quick little letter saying I will bring nothing of the sort because I refuse to testify against myself.
I love it. Dean, I am going to give you an update. Let you know what happens.
Well, hey, yeah, let me know what happens with that. Like I say, I always like to know because you never know what kind of results you're going to get. Eh? They really don't like this civil disobedience.
I know, but I've been a rebel rouser for a while, so my
That's
eyes
perfect.
Have been open. I can't turn back now.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dean. I appreciate your help.
Yeah, you're welcome. I hope it helps.
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
I'm sure.
Thanks, Angela.
Thank you. Okay, next in line, Shupek.
Hi, Cynthia, Marilyn. I've been watching your videos, of course, for about a week now, and I'm glad to say that you're one of the few that actually grasps this credit concept, and I really appreciate that because not enough do. But my question is, you've not mentioned yet anything regarding claiming your land or yourself as your land in the process, either quit deed or torrens or anything like that, and just wanted to get your perspective on it.
Okay, my opinion on all this, and I've had somebody send me information on Crown land patents in Canada where you can apply to the Crown here, and they'll send you a Crown land patent where the Crown recognizes, you know, your claim to this property forever. And my only argument to that is, well, that's all fine and dandy, but exactly who are they to grant me anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where did they get the land from? So I'm a real big fan of not doing any of that kind of stuff. And I think that there was a wonderful thing a couple of years ago that came out, an article to do with meets and bounds.
Mm-hmm.
And getting the meets and the bounds of your property established and then basically sending a letter to the government, a notice to them that you are making claim to that property. And as far as you're concerned, you own it, and I looked it up here because of that last caller, fee simple absolute. I'm claiming to own this property fee simple absolute, you own all the equity in the property because nobody can own the land, right? And that just goes right back to the created is owned by the creator. Right, so we all know who created the earth and the land and everything that's on it. We can never own it, ever, but we can have an equitable interest in property. So you set your meets and bounds, and I don't care if you want to use GPS coordinates. And the four corners enclosure of your property, you send that into the government. You say, I'm claiming that I owe this fee simple absolute. I don't need any friggin' land patents because for me to apply for a land patent, that would be acknowledging that you have the authority to issue such a document in the first place. And I claim that you don't. If you're claiming to have the authority to issue such a document, where does that authority come from? Because if you're going to pull out some papal bull from the 1400s where some asshole at the Vatican made a decree that he owns the planet, well, shit, let's go to court, buddy. I want you to bring that argument up. We'll see who's going to the psych ward when you say that.
What I was referencing.
Go ahead, California. California. Is that Craig in California? Hello? Did you want to ask a question? Who is it?
Joel in California.
Okay, go ahead, Joel. Did you have a question for Dean?
Yeah, he's pretty much been answering them, though. But, Dean, how has all of this new contracting helped you out with your own construction business? And, you know, instead of just, arguing about the taxes with the government, I'm sure it's been able to help you out with just contracting in general with the other public and other private citizens in your contracting business.
I would have to say it was actually the opposite. I think it was my comprehension of contract law from construction that helped me deconstruct what's going on with the legal person. And since I really, really kicked this into high gear last year, my construction company has suffered horrendously as I spend 16 hours a day doing this stuff now with almost no money coming in because it's just become an all-consuming passion, right?
Well, but basically because you're just lacking time towards your business because you're focusing it on this.
Yeah, and even interest. I got to tell you, I get fired up about this. I don't know if it's the mass awakening that's going on around the planet or what's going on, but I get right fired up about this stuff, and that's why some of the interviews I get talking with people there, I'll just get swearing and just get right worked up about things. And I do the same thing in the courtroom too, right? You got to understand, a belligerent claimant is going to have his claim heard more so than anybody else. And, yeah, so my contract experience from contracting is actually what helped me break down what's going on with the person.
I see.
Yeah. I at some point here, I got to start picking my work back up here and getting that kind of part of my life back on order. But in the meantime, I'm kind of going with the momentum that's taken over here since putting a couple of these little private lessons online. Like, I hope everybody understands, we weren't expecting any of this. We had I got tired of there being no action where I live. Nobody was doing anything. Nobody was learning. No one was doing their own research. So I decided, well, I'm going to grab this group of Freeman guys here in Winnipeg, and I'm going to start teaching them some stuff to see what happens. We recorded our first class. Somebody put it online, and here we are like 5-6 weeks later talking with people on the Internet, because we got like 87,000 combined views on the Internet now. It's just been ridiculous.
Bet. You know who sent me the link to your video? You
no.
know Robert Fox?
No.
You don't know Robert Fox? Oh, he's
no.
a legend here in the United States.
Oh, okay.
That would be flattering to me. But anyway, you know, I can relate to what you're saying, though, because it's an obsession. It becomes an outright obsession. I've been doing it for 10 years, and
yeah.
it doesn't stop.
No, it doesn't. You could never
it's
go
like
back to
it. It's like you're cramming for some great test that's going to be given at the end. I always say that.
Yeah, you couldn't go back to living the life of a slave even if you were forced to. They'd actually have to kill you because you'd always feel like you're just being put back in a cage.
Right.
So, and I think that's even more important than us than really, really cracking the code of what's going on. Really, people just have to wake up and realize that at some point here we just got to leave the government behind and just discard them because they're not relevant
anymore. Take responsibility
for ourselves.
Yourself.
Start creating our own communities and our own infrastructure and our own businesses, and just leave these people. Everybody, one of the things I wanted to talk about in one of the upcoming videos, I think, is that everybody wants this solution that they think is going to give them this unlimited book where they can just go out and buy all these fancy cars and mansions, and they got all these billions of dollars in these secret accounts the government's keeping. No, that's all nonsense. When you really understand what's going on, you'll know enough to realize that it's not your game. It was created to suck you in and suck you dry. It wasn't created to give you everything you're ever going to need in life.
Are you familiar with the Amish people?
Yes.
They have a real good method. They have a thing called shunning.
Yeah, there you go.
You know? And I I'm trying to create a new, what do you call it? Soundbite, where the federal government is no longer relevant. I repeat it often, and we have to create our own sound bites. All the masses out there speak in sound bites. We have to create our own sound bites. Sort of drum it into them, you know, things to make them think.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the government needs us because where it sits right now, because they're broke and they're bankrupt and they exist on fiat currency, and we are the creditors of the nation. This is really relevant for you guys all down the States, is what a lot of people, Americans, don't realize. Is when the government talks about how much money they owe, the federal government owes all this money, and they try to convince the American people they owe all this money. No. The American government owes all that money, and they owe it to you.
Right.
You're the creditor of the American government, not the Chinese. Nobody else on this planet. That's a retarded topic they try to bring up, that, oh, look at all this money we owe the Chinese. No. The American government owes everything to the American people. That debt is owed to you guys.
Yeah.
So I raised that point recently in Canada, too, where I said, well, how hard is it to go into a courtroom and if you're up against CRA in Canada? In the United States, it would be the IRS. If you're up against the IRS and you just raise the point just saying, well, hey, all this money that the American government owes that you're claiming to collect taxes to pay off, do they not owe it to the people? And if they owe it to the people, then why are you trying to collect off me? I am the people. Why are you collecting off me to pay me? I don't think the IRS's case is going to go too much further against you.
Okay, California, is that good for you?
It's good for me.
Yeah.
All right.
I know, except for value, definitely works. I've been able to discharge all my taxes.
Yeah, Erico 412. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment. 412.
My name is Lisa. I'm calling from Pittsburgh. There was so much information, Brother Taharka, is so much information. And I think I'm a little baffled because I know that you said you've never been in a courtroom with the ways that you handle things, but these guys are sometimes talking about going into the courtroom. There's, like you said, there's 101 different ways, but I don't want to go into a courtroom. So what would you suggest?
I don't blame you.
This is stuff that applies to every person, but I believe, and I've seen it over my years of living on this planet, that black folks, people that they call black, people of African descent, even if they have the knowledge, they get treated differently than people of the Caucasian persuasion on every level. So even if we have that knowledge, we go into the courtroom, we're going to get a billy club and some handcuffs as opposed to them pointing the finger and asking for the sheriff's number and getting away with that.
All right. Well, then
That's just been my observation.
Okay. Well, what your observation has been against people of African descent that have tried everything under the sun. Is that right?
All right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, me personally, to answer the first part of your question, prior to coming in to the knowledge of this stuff, I done went to jail from everything from failure to pay to homicide, and never a felony. But until I got out of the fact, I said, okay, I don't like this. We're going to do something different. And I learned the key is knowledge is power. But this game that we're talking about, which is a commerce game, this is a game because America is composed of games, too. We got a football game, we got soccer game, golf game, basketball game, game. Out there on the streets, the most companies, student loan people, others, these people are involved in the commerce game. Everything operates in commerce. Everything's based on contract. You will discover that when you have tools of production, when you have the power, you just decided it's knowledge, you discover that color may not make a difference if you do it right.
Okay.
But my strategy...
I can understand that part. Okay.
My strategy is this. This is based on what I learned as a child, because at one point, I was ashamed of where I was, where I was raised and stuff. But what I did not understand that the position that I was put in to witness and be a part of and look at the things that I seen were preparatory for the future. We had a man in my neighborhood, this man here, he had killed 6 men. And the 7th man he killed, we were standing less than 8 feet away watching him kill that man. But what was extraordinary and interesting about this guy was that this guy is extremely quiet, didn't bother anybody, loved children. Never shot a man. Beat him to death or either stabbed him to death. Last man, he stabbed to death. And it was raining, pouring down rain. He was fighting in the rain. and he stabbed him to death. And when he got through with that little, he had nothing but a pocket knife and he walked away. But when he died sitting in his living room in the chair listening to the radio. He wasn't killed. He died from natural causes. Seven men. And then on a second occasion, there was a woman that lived next door to us that had physically killed 10 husbands and tried to beat them. And I thought about that, and I said, well, why would you let me experience this? Why would you, you know, what kind of life was this for me to live? You know, falling down with a glass jar, brass top on it, running down there after it done been raining, trying to get some tadpoles, and I'm laying flat on my stomach, trying to get up and face to face less than 5 inches from a water moccasin. And was able to slowly back up, and he didn't bite me. And the only way he didn't bite me is because he had a frog stuck in his throat. He was eating. But he was standing straight up in the water. Then I turned around and jumped 12 feet of water, couldn't swim. Man come by with bright red trunks. I'm on the last breath of life going down in the water. But when I seen him, I grabbed on them trunks, kept on swimming until he got out of the water. I stepped out of water. I had a bunch of chlorine in my eyes and in my mouth. And I asked the only man that was standing there which way the man went with the red trunks on him because I wanted to thank him. The man told me, he said, boy, ain't nobody in there but you. I said, no. I said, the man that just got out just in front of me, he just got out. And he said, son, I'm telling you, ain't nobody in there but you. So I'm asking you questions. Why is it I'm here to do this here? Why was I preserved all these years? Walking down the street, 19 years old, and a man coming down the street almost a half a block away. I see him coming in the dark. I can see only the shadow, his silhouette. But a car come by, a Caucasian start throwing eggs at the man. He pulled out a pistol and fired at the car. But I'm headed straight toward him, and we're on both on the same side of the street, but the bullet flipping past my ear. It was so close, but it didn't hit me with it. I come to the conclusion that in this life, we have to learn for ourselves and we have to do for ourselves, but if we're doing the right thing, then everything is going to be all right. We're here and in this position where we are because we're supposed to be here.
I agree with that.
Now,
I agree with that.
When it comes to people going into the cold room and people who don't, ask yourself a question, which way you want to go?
Yeah.
If you don't want to go in there, then what you're going to do is study and prepare not to go and do everything that it'll take not to go. We cannot continue to look at some cookie cutout a thing that we don't have to do anything with. Knowledge is power. You can get the tools, but you're going to have to use them. Is any of this making any sense?
Oh, it makes 100% sense. I think about that what you said. Where one of the things that I've come to realize is, I think it's a couple things, but every day that I wake up, that means that I'm here to do something. And I'm sorry, what did you say, Tamarka? I said, what? I'm sorry, you said something?
No, I said, there you go. Go ahead, we listen.
Every day I wake up, I know that I'm here to do something. And I also know that nothing happens by coincidence. I don't believe in luck and coincidence and all of that. And so me, you know, contacting you and working with you and, you know, getting information from you is for a reason. And all the information that you provide for me and the assistance is also for a reason. I sit and I listen to these people on the internet that you tell me to listen to, and I'm like, this stuff is just amazing, and sometimes it's overwhelming. I have to get up from my computer and take a break because it's so much. And, you know, truthfully, I would love to implement it all tomorrow, but I want to make sure that...
We can't do that.
Yeah,
we don't
want to
do that.
Comes on me to fall too, but I want to make sure that I have enough solid foundation to know what I'm doing and do it without me ending up in that cage bar with those crazy folks. So I'm just very, very excited about all this information. It's amazing. It truly is amazing, and it's a lot. It's a lot. Though.
Well,
let's
tell you what. Now we got two more people with their hand raised. I'm gonna leave the line open, but I want to tell you one more thing. You know, in my early days, in my young life, I went to jail so many times. I got to the point where every time I went in there, I seen my brother and sister that I hadn't seen in a long time. And we had a whole lot of things to go. The last time I went to jail, me and two of the brothers, these were real fun to live with from uptown, and we seen each other, and we took over the whole cell block. And we did was invent a game. We invented a game using tables and checkers and chalk. And we created this game on this table where you could slide these checkers, and we was gambling with Sweetie Gold. And we had mounds and mounds of candy stacked on top of it, but the game was hot. It was so hot to the jail officials were standing up and coming down and saying, well, they're down in C block, man. You ought to come look at this right here, man. I ain't seen nothing never seen nothing like this. And they came in and called my name, telling me, hey, man, it's time for you to go. I said, hey, man, I can't leave right now. Don't you see all the candy I'm winning? I can't get up. They said, man, you got to go. So when they took me down, I finally got out of it, and I told them, I said, hey, man, don't eat my candy because I break back in. So, they drove me downtown. I was mad. Boy, look at it. I had the whole jailhouse mad with me. They were trying to figure out a way to negotiate to get the candy back. I'm the only one had all the candy. So when we got downtown, they brought me back in there. Come in the morning, you go see the jail. The jail, when they brought me in there, the jail, see, that's what I ain't sitting on. He said, you want me to bring the police out? You bring him in, I knock him out. He said, what's your problem? I said, man, you dragged me out the biggest game I've had in town. I'm winning a mile of Sweden Club. I got all the candy in the cell block. I'm at the top of my game, and you dragged me out for winning this game to come down here and talk about me some money. He said, well, you should go pay the price. I said, I ain't paying nothing. He said, you got some money? I said, no, I ain't got no money. He said, look, I'll tell you what. You're free to go. You I got out of here. When I seen them jokers on the street, I said, hey, man, where my candy, man? Listen, man, look at us. Man, we ain't that candy, man. He said, man, I'm starting up at that candy, man.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, all kind of stuff that happened. You know, we have all kind of experiences. Let me open up this other line here. Eric code 773. Tell me who Yahweh comes from. What's your question or comment? 773. Okay, let me go to the next one. 434. Area code 434. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, brother. How are you?
Hey, I'm just fine, man. What's going on? Tell me who you are, where you calling.
Yes, I have two, maybe three points I want to make clear.
Okay.
When that brother Gene Keating mentioned... Well, I shouldn't say brother, but when that European, Gene Keating, mentioned that Noah's sons was white and the indigenous tribes of North America were Irish. I don't know if that was a pre-recorded message, but somebody should have rebutted that dude, because irregardless of the value of the information he was given, it sort of took away from his misclassifications of who the people were historically that he mentioned that were white. But that's neither here nor there. The other thing I want to bring up is the sister made a good point mentioning that when people of our ilk go into the court system, we don't get the same treatment. And I didn't hear any qualifiable response, but she's absolutely correct. And one point in particular is, I forget the sister's name down in Florida, named Marissa, who shot a warning shot in the air and got a harsher sentence than Zimmerman. So, you know, there's definitely a disparity in treatment and meeting out of so-called justice, and partly for a good reason. And the third thing I want to bring out, and then I'm going to get off, I came down to the summit for the Moors down in Jacksonville about 2 years ago. And as much as I was encouraged to see Moors coming together, what was discouraging to me was that the whole point that I was led to believe for coming to that particular event was nation building. And for the most part, it seemed to me to wind up being something dealing with an entrepreneurial promotional kind of expo where you had all of these different Moors coming up promoting whatever their entrepreneurial enterprises and gifts are, which is cool. But none of that was the reason why I came to Jacksonville. And to answer the sister's concerns about why we get treated differently is because we have not as yet formed a cohesive government that is recognized by this European system. So, the prophet Noble Drew Ali, he laid the foundation of an express trust, and I heard the European, Gene Keating, mention that the Constitution is an express trust for white people. We have within our authority an express trust that was laid by the prophet to formulate a government and bring all of these concerns from an organizational structure, a viable organizational structure based on our spirituality, and our zodiac, like CM Bay had the zodiac constitution and so on, all of these different kinds of documents that our forefathers and ancestors laid the foundation for. We need to take that foundation and build our governmental structure on top of it, and then force these European commercial law venues to recognize that we're not in their venue, we're not in their jurisdiction, and whatever we receive or whatever we create is based upon, you know, our God-given rights, and they don't have any, they don't have a nickel in that quarter. So, again, you know, I would like to think, and I didn't go to the second summit on the Moors because I was very discouraged by what happened the first time. I would like to think that we as a people would really stand firm on our square with the foundational instruments and just our cultural historical past and identity. We, you know, once we stand firm on that and put it forth as our jurisdictional foundation and authority, we should be able to execute justice or what have you, and at least in doing so, we would have further carried the torch on for the next generation to perfect it even further. And that's as much as I have to say on that. Peace.
Okay, my brother, I certainly appreciate you coming in and telling us what was on your mind, and I thank you for listening to this broadcast. Area code 910. Come on in.
Yes, thank you. Greetings, Brother Tohaka and guests. My name is Scott, calling from North Carolina. How you doing?
Hi, Scott.
Great. My question tonight was, I actually have some debt from the IRS, and I accumulated it through my ex-spouse, okay? So I got my taxes garnished the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. I just want to know if there's a way to get that discharged.
Well, I don't know about the discharge, but there's a way to deal with them and put them in a position where it wouldn't be a good idea to come out for the bill.
when you say put them in a position.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, brother.
Well, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And what I like is I like to be polite, tell the truth, and tell them to please point out to me where I told you a lie. I like that. It's so clean, it's so pure, it's so nice. They hate to see me coming. So that's the way I like doing it. I think one of the major problems that we have is we don't understand, I keep telling people to be blanketed. We understand the underlying factors. First of all, there is no money. Okay, we got fiat currency floating around, and it tells you right on there it's a promissory note. A promise. Okay, but here's the question. The promise between who? Who? And if you look up the word note, look up the word promise, and it will become completely clear to you, and it was written by them. That's what they put in there. So when you call them on that, then you lose your hand. Now, we have the packages, internal revenue packages, school loan thing, mortgage packages, all that. You get these tools. Then we got a library where you can get in there if you need any backup studies to do, any more clarity you need to get on what you are about to do and how to see this thing through. But the way I see it, based on how I was raised, is I think it is my duty to not inform people so they can win little small battles. I think what I like better is to create pioneers, real thunderlips, because that's all I know. That's all I ever knew. That's where I came from. So little namby-pamby stuff like that, you know, knowledge is power. You got a problem, solve the problem. If you got a shot and you bleeding profusely, stop the bleeding. You go up against a man and he want to go to war, solve the problem. You got to get in the ring. Don't get in there unless you have intentions to win. And you're prepared to do whatever you got to do by any means necessary. Because a man ain't asking for freedom, justice, and equality in America. He's going to take it. Now, I hear a whole lot of males attempting to masquerade as men, and I ain't mad with you for trying to stand up. But you're going to have to get real with it and look at this devil straight in the eye. Deal with it. Yeah, I got another question.
That's it, but I truly appreciate your help. I'm definitely going to look through your archives and get some more information. Okay, you have a great one.
All right. Call. Okay, Lisa, I'm back. You're going to have to hold on one more second, and then we'll get to the rest of the callers. Now it's time to raise your hand on part one of this broadcast, and I'm going to take a little quick break, and I will be right back, okay? Y'all hold on one second, Moles. One second. area code 678. Tim, who you are, what's your question or comment? Area code 678.
You can hear me?
Mm-hmm. Loud and clear.
Okay, yeah. It's funny, though. I was reading a book by Mary, what is it, Crow? Howard Carver?
Mary Crow. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, I was reading that earlier before I got your invite, but I was wondering about how they address this dealing with the racial thing, you know, because from my studying, I come up, you know, I've been seeing this whole concept, you know, they keep bringing up about, you know, this was formed under, you know, racism.
Okay, well, I don't think they do. What you have to understand is these people are doing what everybody else is doing on Earth. We're the only one got it wrong. They ain't trying to save everybody. They're trying to save themselves. Chinese trying to save themselves. Japanese trying to save themselves. We have this concept where we, God said we're supposed to love everybody. We the ones with that. We the only nation on the planet with that. Where is somebody else's religion and God and stuff? We the ones got there. They're telling you. I'm putting that there. Okay. Next question.
And it was something else. You know, I was researching and I read about the brother down in Texas. He was under the Morris Nation, and he was, you know, they're talking about how he got arrested behind it. You know anything about that? You heard?
No. I understand one thing. You can say or do anything you want to do. My question is, where's your government? Where's your flag? Where's your constitution? Where's your love for your kind and your people? Where is your government? Not your organization, not your club, not your group. What government are you a citizen of? And Europeans just told us for the past 2.5 hours that they are dealing with what they know in their kind and their people. That's what they're talking about. Speaking Chinese, they're telling the same thing about them. Mexicans, everybody got it right but us. But in everybody, you got a Japanese government, you got a Chinese government, you got a Korean government. You got it. You understand?
So, I mean, where's our government?
Go to www.morrisamericangov.org. Go to that website. There's a national conference call line that you can dial in at 7 days a week. And any question you got toward that government, you can ask that question. They have a question and answer period. If you want to go and visit them, you can do that. They'll tell you how to do that. You want to know where people are in your location. That's a part of the government. You can do that. You got the flag, the Constitution, the bylaws, the rules, the regulations, all that. You can learn that. They give you all that.
Okay. Yeah, that's understandable because, yeah, they, you know, they going under, like, England, and they trying to use the different Native American tribes, you know, to go under, too, to break away from the United States.
You worry about the wrong thing. You don't have to be concerned about it. Just be concerned about you and your English story. You wouldn't go to somebody else. To learn about you, is you go to your own people.
Mm-hmm.
Or you do your own research. If you can't do that, you get down on your knees and you ask your creator, your ancestor. The answer will come. That's how to do that. Cut the idiot box off. Don't, you know, when the game cut on, come on, cut it off. Do your own research.
Mm-hmm.
Got another question?
No, that'd be, I appreciate it.
Okay, bro. Thank you for calling in. Lisa, you still there?
I am still here.
do you have another question, sister? We're down to the last 5 minutes. 6 minutes.
I have a comment about, it's a quick comment, Brother Parker. It's about the comment that the brother made about someone checking John Keating for saying the original people were Indians and Sham was white and all that. One of the things I think we have to do as a people is stop trying to convince other people who we are. As long as we know, we don't have to rebut any of that because they do what they want to do regardless. And we have to stop worrying about what other people think and what other people say. Now, if they put their hands on you, that's a different story. But we can't rebut all of this because we'll spend too much time trying to convince them, and we should be doing other things that helps us build together. I think he said, you know, we need to come together. I don't know where you can get 100 people of African descent that agree on one common goal. I'm not saying it's not out there. It's just been my experience that I haven't been able to see that. You get them together and they want to, well, Jesus said and Allah said and da-da-da-da-da, and it's just too much confusing. We can't come together and do anything. So that I just wanted to say that. That's all.
Well, because I'm in agreement with you. When Gene Keating went from there over into the history, he had every right to do so because he was dealing with what? His story. All you got to do is take the word. His story. Okay?
Yeah.
You got your story. You know, all that's fine. You have this game going on called the Commerce Game. Very, very good in that. But anyway, sister, I thank you for coming in, and we have come
thank
to the close of the broadcast, and we will be coming back with part two. We get all this little science down in the Commerce Game created by the people that were doing the talking because we are experiencing things from that, and I want to make sure that we get that information out there, and then we can go back and do some other things.
All right.
Okay, Maury, we've come down to the close of the broadcast, and I certainly appreciate you all listening. We're going to come back with part two of this thing in dealing with professionals, contract, equity, law, mortgage, loans, and justice. And we will have an entirely different lineup. I was unable to bring everything here this evening, and I don't think it was a good idea if I have. But we'll come back from a whole fresh perspective and tune in to our next broadcast. We'll do part two of this. I've been your host, Tahaka Mana El Bay.
like we did. We started rocking the ship. And we want everybody out there to rock the ship with us. Everybody pop that soul. Are you ready?